kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual is Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm alive. I'm not kicking. It's raining and I feel like shit. Let's go. Let's do this.
The reason you are in such an eager mood to get moving is because we have guests.
We are. Yeah, we have.
You're not alone this time.
No, Scott.
Look who it is. I'm here to interrupt Eternal as usual. And it's
Carnage.
A twin stick shooter, and we have a developer from a twin stick shooter on the show, so you know I'm excited.
Hello.
Somebody give him some Ritalin. Is that what calms kids down? Is that it?
I don't know. We could give him something.
Or keep him out of my steroids, because something is amiss. God damn. Next, go ahead. Sorry. What's going on?
Hadar Silverman of Earthborn Interactive is here. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on. For the people who don't know why you're here, tell us about your new game.
Yeah, it's called Trying to Fix Bugs in Flutterbox for Launch. So it's the new game is called Flutter Bombs. It's on Xbox One. It just came out on Friday. And I'm actually pretty happy to hear that so far people like it. So
yeah.
It's a twin stick shooter. Featuring the protagonist of a butterfly. The butterfly collects nectar and drops bombs, hence the name Flutter Bombs.
It all works. It just makes sense.
And I couldn't help but think that you said, as you're fixing bugs in a game where you kill bugs, it's a great idea. And you knew the puns were coming already.
What happens if you squash all the bugs and then there's nothing left to kill in the game?
Wow, I don't know. That's kind of an existential
crisis.
Question.
Yeah.
Like, what if there's nothing left?
You weren't expecting deep shit from the redneck voice, were you? You're welcome.
What if we're all bugs?
I mean, in some kind of like galactic way, we kind of are. If you think about how like shrimp probably think they're pretty big fuckers compared to what, plankton. So
yeah,
what if we're just the shrimp of the universe?
Really makes you think.
You're welcome. Deep shit from the redneck.
That needs to be a new segment on the show. Deep shit from the redneck. Harry Cabbage, shit just got real within 2 minutes.
Around these parts, we call it manure.
So let's start at the beginning. Where did the idea come from of a twin stick shooter where you kill bugs as a bug?
This started back as like a little landscape study years ago, and I'd say like 2013. I was teaching myself how to use Unreal Development Kit. In hopes of maybe like doing some modding, you know, on Unreal Tournament. And also I have a background in architecture. So I was kind of hoping to do some landscape work in UDK and kind of bring it into the architecture world. And, as soon as I added a butterfly to the landscape, and brought that butterfly to life with, like some physics to play around with, kind of making a little puzzle flyer or physics flyer. It like quickly turned into a game because the API for weapons in Unreal Tournament was already in UDK. So I'd say like, you know, an hour after I programmed physics into a flying butterfly, it immediately was weaponized. And
interesting.
Just because the API was there, and it was a lot of fun at first. It was a pretty cool little study. And it evolved from there. So it went through many phases. I looked at a couple different platforms to test it on and see how it changed the design of the game. And ultimately, I think the kind of most interesting form of it ended up being a twin stick shooter. I think as like a physics flyer, it doesn't work too well being able to or having to shoot and fly physics based things at the same time. But as a twin stick shooter, it was a lot of fun and people really seemed to enjoy it. So we kind of moved forward with that.
What other game design ideas did you have in mind before settling on Twin Stick Shooter?
Well, so that physics flyer, which was also using a gamepad, so like you'd squeeze the trigger and that would give the butterfly a little bit of lift. And you kind of float this thing around the environment. And then we actually did a version in VR too. And VR, the oscillating movement was kind of jarring for people that were like new to VR. I feel like people who play in VR quite a bit, or like who've played, what's Elite Dangerous, games like that, like they were probably really good at it in VR. But because we had so many new people to VR that the bouncy movement of the butterfly was kind of problematic. So we ended up putting it on rails and making it like a rail shooter.
Cool.
And it was okay. I don't know. It's still a lot to take in. I think what the issue was when we were presenting it to people in VR, that it was such a new medium that people were kind of more interested in looking around the scene than they were in engaging targets on a fixed rail. And so I think we kind of walked away from that. But, yeah, it might be worth revisiting that down the road.
I was going to say, that like sounds like something interesting to try out on, like, PlayStation VR.
Yeah, PSVR would be cool for that.
Yeah, even without the VR, like maybe if you had like that's a cool idea though. Like maybe have bonus stages or something in between, like the twin stick levels, and just go on rails mode or something like that. That would be cool.
Yeah, there's a game that does that that was on PS3. I think it was like Jack and Daxter on PS3.
Oh, probably. Yeah, they had all a bunch of mini games and stuff.
Yeah, I want to say like they had some really good transitional mini games that were on rails too. So
cool. Yeah.
Carnage just doesn't want to be eaten by the fish anymore.
Yeah, that was rough. I was just streaming the game actually on my channel, and I enjoy the game, but it was a little frustrating when I died by one hit by the traps that I found. But now I know like not to stand over a pond and not to stand over the spike pit on the second level.
Yeah. So each board has a 3 no-fly zones, and all the boards are procedural, so they'll mix themselves up. So, but 3 of those tiles that you fly over are no-fly zones, and the thought there was that you can be doing perfectly well, feeling good about yourself, and true to nature is anytime you're feeling well and doing great in life, nature has no problem giving you a swift kick to the balls.
Yeah, so pretty much. It's,
maybe that's kinda, why I'm doing well. I don't have balls to get kicked in, so I was fine.
Oh, Cole, you and your lack of balls.
It just throws off so much with gaming, man. So much missed opportunities.
Those no-fly zones are no joke. I was pretty much 99% of the way to a boss fight on the one stage, and I got caught in one of them, and that's a morale killer.
Mm-hmm. Have you considered adding more checkpoints in between? Because you have a checkpoint between the level and the boss.
That's good, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of a difficult thing from my perspective to put into the game. I think that the checkpoint between the boss being activated is sufficient. Mm-hmm. But I also, I'm totally open to like video game common law. If the community decides that hey, those no-fly zones should really be like 2 hits, so you get like a warning shot. I'm open to changing it. I'm not going to be too stubborn with the art of the project or whatever.
I don't mind that the no-fly zones are 1 hits, but for me the bigger issue is the length of time it takes to fill the whole bar to get to the boss.
If there was
a part way where if you died, then you your bar was at least half filled, and then you could continue.
Or maybe like shorten the level possibly a little bit. Like I felt like it was a little bit too long to like get through the level. Yeah, and fill up the bar.
Okay. Yeah,
But I mean, then again, that's story mode, right? So I know there's multiple modes in the game, so there's always like more challenge for other stuff as well.
You can just make a super pussy crybaby mode for us.
Yeah, where you can disable achievements, so all the achievement horrors, like even myself, I'll be like, oh no, I'm not going to do it on the easy mode because I can't get achievements then.
Scott, you and your achievements.
I saw towards the end when you were trying to get that triggerfish achievement.
I was actually trying on the last couple minutes of the stream before, but I did not happen to get it. I'm not sure what I did wrong. Also, I saw a shout out to, I think, another reviewer or streamer, Otacon from Xbox World. I saw on True Achievements, he actually has all the achievements except for one. And I'm actually curious if the achievement is just hard, or maybe you can like shed some light on how to unlock that one. But I'm just taking a look right now. It's Swarm and Friendly. Keep at least one cicada swarm alive for the duration of the level at Tech's Quarry.
Yeah, so actually I was chatting with, what was it, Otacon? What was the last thing of his Twitter? Otacon something.
Oh, Otacon.
I think it's 62, like 64, something like that.
Yeah, Otacon 62, I think. I believe that's his gamer tag. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. So yeah. I was chatting with him through Twitter, and the Otacon 62, I think he's got like 34 of the 35 achievements already, but that one achievement is currently broken. So Swarm and Friendly, I can confirm, is broken, but that's been fixed for the next build, and we're currently going through Cert to fix a couple different bugs we've already found.
That's good to know. I appreciate that, because like I know it's, you know, some developers unfortunately don't care much about the achievement community, but if it's already in the patch, that's great news, and thank you for that.
Oh, and there's lots of good puns in the achievement.
Oh yeah, dude, we got to talk about that.
It's okay. There's Carnage is only going to unlock one and never bother with any of the others.
Winds beneath your wings, and too bad the song doesn't play when you get the achievement, though, right?
Yeah,
license issues.
Licensing issues, I guess, right?
Licensing. But let it go. Reach the boss at Cloud Reek's peak without defeating a Mantis. Yeah, nice.
Terrible.
Scott, you and your puns.
There's a Britney Spears reference too, which I honestly don't know how that made it in, but it did. I think it was one of the achievements was "Oops, I did it again."
Oh god!
Oh great!
You got to kill
the boss at. Oh yeah, I see it. Defeat the boss at and twin at Daisy's Boneyard.
Yep. Yeah, that's it.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, what other song references are in the game?
All right, I think that's probably the gist.
Wait, there's one here I see. Is this based on a song? Don't give up on your dreams. Don't give up on your dreams.
Yeah, don't give up on your nice. Dreams. Yeah.
Oh my.
Nice.
Oh, puns. What are we going to do?
How did you decide to come up with the level designs? Was it just something that kind of struck out to you? Because there doesn't seem to be any specific story to the campaign.
It's a shmup, so I made it pretty simple in terms of story components. You know, when you unlock a butterfly, you see it kind of break out of this cocoon thing, and ultimately you're arriving to these sites up this mountain, and you're trying to free whoever that grove belonged to. You're kind of freeing that butterfly from their grove that they're now stuck in, and then it's been taken over by whatever, every other bug on the planet, so...
I mean, it makes sense for a twin stick shooter. Like, I'm not usually into story based games, as Eternal knows. Like, I always try to skip things in my when I stream games, like skip cutscenes. But yeah, hardcore action, that's what you want. You know, you're not going to go looking for butterfly lore, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
there are some thoughts on story and narrative that were actually involved in the first version of the game, and that may if this. Twin stick manages to kind of sustain us for like the next few months or year or whatever, in supporting this project or product, then, there is a story that we would like to kind of integrate into a potential follow up.
Oh,
interesting. Also on that note, is there any chance of, like you said, maybe later on possibly bringing in, I think there's local co-op, but I'm wondering if there's any plans for online co-op.
That's a massive difference in scope, and
that's true.
It's primarily just me working on the project, but I am working with contractors occasionally, and I'm sort of at the end of what I can put into this game from a production standpoint. So now it's really got to roll out, and it's got to like, you know, I'm hoping that people enjoy it, and from that point on, I can continue kind of feeding the fire, and which will get me to the next. Getting this thing released on another platform.
Right.
And then kind of from there, see where the path is going to lead.
Yeah, gotcha.
So that does bring up a good question, because Harry Cabbage asked in chat how many guys are on the team. So it's mostly just you.
Yeah, mostly me. It's been a side project since back when I started that landscape study. Mm-hmm. I'd say about halfway through, I did start working with some contractors. So when you get to the credits of the game, and there is a cool little Easter egg in the credits of the game. But if you get to the credits of the game, you'll see that the team that was involved and all the contractors listed and special thanks.
On that note, by the way, I tried actually on my stream. I don't know if this is a glitch or you have to beat the story to actually unlock the credits, or because I checked on the settings screen and on the little credits tab, I clicked on it and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, true. So you have to beat the game. And there's a reason for it, because there's a cool little Easter egg in the credits.
Ooh, okay. Well, I got to play through the whole thing. Let's see. Jeez.
Oh, no, Scott. Nice. What are you going to do?
What am I
He'll never see the credits. He will never see the Easter egg.
That's why YouTube exists.
And he
I did do pretty bad on my stream, and even though coming from a twin stick aficionado, I haven't gotten a chance to play it beforehand too much, so I was only playing a couple hours in. So yeah, gonna need some practice.
He was adamant that he could shoot the spiders, and you cannot shoot the spiders.
I'm so used to like shooting everything, so I realized that the regular gun didn't actually do anything to the big spiders after a while, but I kept doing it anyway.
That's a good point that you bring up, though. This version of, or this game, or the reason why it was developed the way it was specifically supposed to test out like if multi-dimensions can work in a shmup. So it's kind of good to see that reaction from you from my side to know that, like, is this a viable game to play as a shmup, because it does have multiple dimensions, and will we start seeing more complex games down the road where maybe there's going to be a third dimension up high too, or where there's more things flying. It's kind of an experimental project that I realize it's off the beaten path a little bit, but that's part of the fun of it too.
Awesome. I'm glad my fails have helped towards the development.
Like I paid attention and realized that you couldn't hit them that way. So I thought it worked. I thought it did fine. Okay, this is below me. That makes sense. I'm shooting ahead.
I was Carnage just is playing and enjoying and talking and looking at chat every couple seconds. So sue me.
Yeah, that's why he kept getting eaten by the
That was fun.
See, I'm pretty sure I actually killed a spider with gunfire, though, because it was up on a higher plane than most of the other ones.
Oh.
There are some. You can actually tell where the ones are up higher or not. I could anyway. Pay attention, jackasses.
I don't know if it was just me, but I ran out of ammo pretty quick, and I'm trigger happy. That's probably why. You're probably like, don't hold in right trigger the whole time, right? But it's a little bit. There's ammo everywhere.
Thing I saw you doing, like as soon as you would hit the nectar, you were already holding the trigger and firing, even though nothing was around.
Yeah,
just wasting those bullets.
I'll learn my lesson sooner or later.
And then you were sitting there fussing, I can't get any ammo, and it's like, take your finger off the fucking button, Carnage.
Yeah, exactly. I like the scoring system though. There's the multipliers, a bonus if you chain the enemies. I noticed. That's pretty cool. Are there leaderboards? I'm not sure if I've seen leaderboards in there.
Yeah, there are. It's not in the game though. You have to go through the hub just to see the leaderboards in the hub. We actually do have the interface for it in the game. It's just kind of hidden right now, because I'm really only going to do that if put the time into being able to do that if that's something people are really interested in.
Right. It makes sense. Cool.
But yeah, you can right now, if you just go to the hub, you can see the leaderboards listed.
Oh, I see. Cool.
Okay, so as I was trying to say before, Carnage kept interrupting.
And K4, go ahead.
Carnage mentioned the power-ups and getting the streaks. What's some of the highest streaks that you've seen players get?
I think we're at somewhere around 60, I think, is some of the higher streaks.
I'm actually really close to that then. Yeah!
Oh, nice.
I think I hit like 58 or something like that in one game.
That should be there's a hero stat.
I'm going to go look.
You do that. Look it up.
That way I can't be interrupted while I'm paying attention to something. Oh, wait, no, I can't, because I'm in the middle. I don't want to lose my checkpoint. I'm at a boss. Never mind. I'll wait.
Well, fight the boss. What else are you doing? Scott's talking the whole time.
I know. I can't get a word in anyway.
I'm actually sitting on the main menu just admiring the nice background. It's almost like doubles as a nature screensaver, right? It's relaxing.
I think it's neat, though, that it's a butterfly shmup.
Like, I agree. Like, definitely different.
So many times, I like shmups, and I play a lot of them for the show. And 95% of them is like
sci-fi,
or there's zombies. And then it's just like, you're a butterfly. And I'm like, oh. Yeah. I don't even like sci-fi shit. I just like shmups because I like the way they play. So this was nice. It was different. It was something different to look at. And I could play it with my kids and not have to explain why we were mowing down zombies.
That's awesome. Thanks. Yeah.
I'm like, here, dude, go play with your sisters and play something that's not Minecraft for 24 minutes.
No, now you have to explain why you're murdering bugs.
No, because we're girls. Bugs are awful. So it just makes sense that, like, the good bug is killing the crap bugs.
So are there any bugs you feel bad for in the game?
Fucking no.
Even those big, ugly boss bugs?
Those are the worst. That one looks like a stink bug. Fuck stink bugs.
What kind of bugs are the bosses in the game?
They're like ill-tempered, mutated versions of real bugs. So, like, actually, the first boss is really more reptilian. That's from, like, a chameleon and a thorn bug combination. The second bug is, like, mostly just a beetle. Most of the bosses are kind of formed after beetles in some form or another. Different. There's, like, apparently however many thousands of different beetle species, if not more. And so each boss, we kind of looked for visually distinct beetle types so that you definitely knew that you're at like the Neutron's lab boss or whatever. Let's see. There's dragonflies. The evil dragonflies are one boss type.
I assume the final boss is Paul McCartney, of course.
Oh, Jesus.
You're waiting for it.
Let it be, Scott. Let it be.
Oh, there we go. Damn it, Joe.
I love when I get Scott at the puns.
It's like you got podcast. It. I don't want to be here anymore.
Back. Good one.
Bye.
Cole's like, get me the hell away from all of this.
Nice. Wolfwood in chat going further. Let it be. Yeah.
What other Beatles-related puns could we think of? That's all the show's going to be from now on, just Beatles puns.
The Beatle Pun Podcast.
Yep. Oh, Lord.
An all-upgrades achievement called Be Prepared.
Oh, so the upgrades, are they permanent, or how does that work? Are they upgradable?
For the, what do you mean, the, which upgrades? The,
I know there are some temporary in, like, the level that you can pick up. Of course, those are just for the level, but are there any, like, permanent upgrades throughout the story and stuff?
Not yet, but I'd like to find a way to integrate that. So down the road, there may be some nice teaser content to throw in just with a random update. I'm sorry. What's that?
Oh, I was just saying, like, in the survival mode, to make it like even easier later on, as you know, as it gets harder and harder, if you ramp up the difficulty, you can always add more upgrades, I guess, that way.
Yeah, that's a way to do it too. I mean, the goal for this game too is not to really have any DLC or any kind of future like plugins or add-ons. I'm an old school gamer, and I really loved it back in the day when you could just buy a game and that's what you got, and that was
fun. True. And, I definitely agree. With all the loot box shit going on now, it's definitely refreshing to have, like you said, all the gameplay in one thing right away.
Yeah. And so, like, updates will come in, but I don't plan on putting any kind of, like, payable content. It's just, if it comes with the game, it'll come into the game. Yeah.
Nice.
You cannot pay to win, Carnage.
Good.
The fish will eat you anyway.
You can't pay for an infinite ammo upgrade.
Although, I do like my Gems of War, which, I've probably spent too much already. So let's move on back to Flutter Bombs.
Scott, are you a whale for Gems of War?
Oh, man.
I'll take that as a yes. So what kind of shmups did you look to for inspiration for Flutter Bombs?
Oh, a bunch. That's a really fun genre to study. So we looked at Mushihime-sama, which is awesome. I highly recommend that. That's a really more hardcore traditional shmup.
What platforms is that one on?
I just played it on the Steam. It's like through an emulator on Steam, I guess.
Harry Cabbage knows what it is. He's in chat. He's a big shmup fan too. Yeah.
Cool. Oh yeah, I see him. Yeah, I can see it there. What else? We also looked at Ikaruga, which
nice.
Was pretty cool.
Nice.
And the thing is, and actually, those two examples were really interesting to look at too, because they do have multiple dimensions, but it's all in like parallax space. So there's really no timing difference. If you shoot something below you or above you, it's just like you can shoot it. And those were two cases where we kind of thought, well, okay, if we add this new Z dimension, there will be some timing issues when players are planning to take out four or five bugs at a time with their bombs. And then in terms of other references, though, we looked at Android Cactus. Like, I love that game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was actually, I remember that one. Yeah, it was on Steam for a while, and then they brought it to the One as well for, I think it was a game with gold at one point.
The games that House Marquee or House Mark, the ones that they make are awesome, like Next Machina was pretty cool.
Oh, the ones, you mean the ones that don't come to Xbox? Damn it. Yeah.
I'd love to see House Mark shooters come to Xbox. I love House Mark. Right? I love their games. I'm just bummed that they're all PlayStation exclusive.
Wasn't it Rezogun also from them?
I don't know if Rezogun was theirs.
I'm double checking right now. But either
that's
way,
why we all have computers like and Google.
It seems like they do have a Sony, some kind of exclusivity thing.
I played theirs on Steam through PC.
Oh, okay. Steam, I guess not Xbox, though, or something.
Oh, they are Rezogun, yeah.
Yeah.
Stormdivers, Alienation, Ex Machina.
Definitely looks good, yeah. I just don't own a PS4.
And Gungeon, too. Actually, I looked at Gungeon.
Ooh, Gungeon, yes. Dude, I agree. Love that. And you said, like, some of the stuff in this is roguelike, so that makes sense. Some inspiration from that.
Yeah,
because you said some of the random procedurally generated, right?
Yeah, it's some of the, it's kind of a procedural arena.
Okay.
I'm just waiting because I never know when Scott's going to talk.
Yeah, I started eating a Rice Krispie treat because I was like, it's safe.
Eternal, you could just mute your mic the whole stream. Me and Joe will go on out. No,
that's sexist. You should feel bad.
Sexist. Nice try. Oh, man.
So how long have you been working on Flutter Bombs?
On and off for like, I don't know, since like 2013. But that's like, you know, moonlighting part-time on the job. So it's not like, this is definitely not 6 years worth of work. This is an aggregate of night times, intermittent night times over the course of 6 years. I'd say the last 6 or 7 months though have been full time just getting this thing done. And that's where you get into the whole thing of like building a game for fun turns into building a game as a chore, because that's when you have to start doing like technical requirement testing and things like that.
But now it's out. I mean, was it worth it?
It was. There's really no feeling in the world like sitting down in your living room and playing a game that you built on your own Xbox. That being said, too, so I have kids, or I have a son, and then I have another kid on the way. And, it's really cool. My son's not old enough to play yet, but he's already picking up the gamepad and, like, trying to, you know, putting his hands around the gamepad. And, like, just watching him move the butterfly around and getting his ass kicked is super fun. And, but also, like, being able to jump in and play with him is a lot of fun, too. So, like, I know he's not going to be really understanding what's going on, but, you know, local co-op, I've had a lot of fun playing with, like, you know, nieces and nephews also. Cool. So that's a really good feeling too, is just being able to play with the family. And also with my buddies. I don't have too many gamer friends, but some of my gamer buddies do like playing the game. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
Have you thought about implementing multiple difficulty levels for younger audiences? And Cole?
And even Carnage? No.
That's been brought up several times, and there's somebody that's been constantly saying, hey man, put it in easy mode. Hey man, put it in easy mode. And I've even read articles about it that said that, you know, easy mode has never really hurt a game.
What are your thoughts on that?
What's that?
What are your thoughts on that? Because that's been a hot topic lately with...
I meant to bring that up yesterday, but I wasn't annoyed enough to do it at the time.
What about easy mode? You talking to me? My thoughts on it, or
go for it.
Man, I don't know. I mean, it depends on how you look at games. I mean, some people look at their games as these like untouchable pieces of interactive art, and they're not going to put an easy mode in. Some of it make it excruciatingly difficult to finish a game, but that's kind of the intent of the gameplay. For shmups, I don't know. It's like I'm still on the fence, to be honest. I think easy modes are okay. Like when I play through Halo CE, and I just love like crushing through Halo CE, and that's. I think with Combat Evolved, I just like playing on – I do play on easy mode just because I love crushing through the game.
Yeah.
I've played it on –
powerful and enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think for this type of game, though, I don't know if I really see the need to. I mean, like back in the day when I hung out in arcades, like there wasn't an easy mode in shmups in arcades. I think you just kind of threw in $20 worth of quarters if you had it.
Yeah. Like, that was the easy mode. Like Mom, could I have some more money?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, with the shmup, I think it's kind of the nature of the shmup. But if a lot of kids are going to be playing this, you know, I don't want it to necessarily turn into like a market driven thing either. I want it to be true to the nature of the genre. So
yeah, that's true though. That way, more people can obviously, as you said, you want as many people to access it as possible. So like that would definitely help. I think maybe make it so that you can't like get leaderboard or achievements on the easiest difficulty. So that way, other people won't complain because I know that happens.
Don't give that suggestion. I hate when easy modes get rid of achievements.
Well.
From an accessibility standpoint, that's not ideal. One of my biggest issues with how long the levels are is because I get hand fatigue. And yeah, well, I can pause, yeah. But if I stop and come back an hour or so later after I've rested, then I have to start the whole level over. And I shouldn't be punished because I have a disease that makes my hands hurt.
That's true. I see what you mean. I know they're definitely, like you said, it's a hot topic, especially with like some other stuff that's been going on lately. I don't know if you heard about like the, what was it? Resident Evil released a $5 DLC where you can just buy like a bunch of unlocks
for infinite
ammo and get achievements. And, you know, everyone that did it normally is like, oh man, you know, and then buying achievements. What's the point of an achievement? You know, there's both sides to it. But
it totally devalues the experience from an achievement hunting point of view. I totally get it.
Yeah.
I think getting more kids to play it, it probably makes sense to put on easy mode.
I don't really know the art style, like the relaxing kind of thing. You know, more maybe people that are not into gaming as much might pick it up. So.
It is a casual game. I mean, I've designed it specifically so play times are kind of like the brief period of time I have between, running from one thing to the next. It's right. I say, okay, I've got 10 minutes. I bet I can crush out, Switchblades Badlands and kill the boss in that 10 minutes. So,
So it's good for pick up and play and just like short bursts.
Makes sense. Yeah, and plus I noticed you can actually just do the campaign. You don't have to do it in one playthrough like some old school shmups, obviously, so that's good. You can just pick, load up a level whenever you want, and that's cool.
Thanks. Yeah, that's totally a part of it. Is just that's kind of the checkpoint, too, is once you clear the level, it's open.
I guess it's kind of going back rush, to like I would guess, or I haven't unlocked it yet, but unlock boss rush? How do you unlock boss rush, and is it in that mode one segment, or can you pick up where you left off another time?
Yeah, so Boss Rush was actually influenced by the game Fury. Have you played Fury at all?
Yes, mm-hmm. I actually streamed that one a while back, yeah.
Yeah, it's an awesome game. So we put in Boss Rush, and that's actually more for hardcore players. So with Boss Rush, you go straight from one boss to the next, and you actually carry your health over from boss to boss as well.
Oh, wow. Mm. What's the way of getting health back, by the way? I haven't really, when I was playing, I didn't even notice when I got health out. So it's just killing any enemies will get you a little health every once in a while?
Yep. Yeah, and in the wingset upgrades will restore your health and nectar.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so you kind of have to use those at strategic points as well. Killing bugs is a okay way to get little morsels of life here and there. But when you do it, they emit these really cool particle effects, which look nice and pretty as they fly towards the butterfly. So you kind of feel like I feel more alive when I'm killing bugs.
Nice.
I feel so alive.
Yeah.
For the very first time.
And what else? For life. Yeah, I mean, during boss rush, there are, if you play your cards right, there are ways to get life back during the rush. So, like, some of the bosses do spawn adds, and you know, you can kind of, like, intentionally sit around being alive to kill adds to get life back. So that's part of the strategy as well.
Hmm, that works. What led to the $20 price point on the game? That was something that came up during our review. I know Scott and I talked about it before we found out what the price was, and we thought it might be a $10 game. I thought it might be a $15 game. What led to the $20 price point? Because I know that turned a handful of people off in the chat.
I think it was what differentiated us from a lot of other traditional shmups is that we went full 3D with it, with like fully, you know, arted environments.
I know what you mean though. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the time and care that went into that, was what generated that price point. And that price point has been discussed quite a bit too. That does kind of seem a little steep, but it's better to do that and then be wrong and say, okay, maybe $15 will be more appealing. As opposed to saying, well, it's 15, but we should have charged 20. So just, a business standpoint, it's kind of a learning experience for me. But ultimately, for sure, too, this encourages us to get involved in whatever sales are going to go on.
That's true. They do sales pretty often. I know that, there's obviously a big spring sale right now. So, I'm sure that, you'll be able to work something out with a sale later on. But yeah, I do agree that it was a little bit steep.
Yeah, if I had actually known that Spring Sale was going to launch the same day as the game, I totally would have tried to be a part of that for launch. But I had no idea that Spring Sale was going to happen. So,
but yeah, I know Xbox does like sales every week with ID at Xbox Games, and I know you guys worked with the ID program. I would assume.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, so that's gonna. I'm sure there's a way to set that up for a sale. So that's cool.
I mean, I don't know. Do you think the game's too expensive? You think it should be cheap?
I've seen, like, I know what you mean with the art style. Like, it's definitely, like, very, like, very different and unique.
It's just illustrated.
I would say, yeah, it's, but I would say, like, something around 10 to 15 is, yeah, I think it's probably $5 too much, to be honest.
Okay.
I think 15 would have been a good price point of the game.
Okay.
Just our opinion, though.
He's going in now to see if he can mark it on sale.
Never know.
Give me 5 minutes, guys.
We're changing the world with this show. We are changing the world.
One starfish at a time.
So when you're not working on Flutter Bombs or you're not programming or fixing bugs, squashing bugs, what kind of games are you playing right now?
I just downloaded Halo Combat Evolved again because I need my fix to get through that game.
the Master Chief Collection one or the OG one? Oh, okay, nice. I heard they're coming with Halo Reach soon. That'll be cool.
Really?
To go back to. Yeah, they announced Halo Reach is coming to Master Chief Collection. Pretty excited.
Well, that was in Game Pass. So as soon as I got Game Pass, I just grabbed a bunch of games off that. Grip, actually, I've been playing a lot of Grip. That's pretty cool. I did used to play a lot of racing games back in the day. So, Grip and Dirt were awesome.
Any Burnout?
It's funny. I didn't really play as much Burnout. I maybe once or twice. I think I was playing like Need for Speed at the time that Burnout was out.
Oh, because I was going to say they have a game now that's kind of similar to to Burnout, Dangerous Driving. I think, Joe, you might be reviewing it on the show or
we already did. Future.
You already did. Yeah. I am behind. Fail.
Literally yesterday, Scott. Thanks for paying attention.
Only one day late.
Is that game awesome?
I enjoy it, but I think the AI needs some reworking. Some of the events on there, it's just brutally unfair how the AI acts in the game, where you could be racing flawlessly and they'll still pass you.
Mm. Yeah.
Just out of nowhere.
Okay. What about the destruction?
It's not as destructive as the original Burnout was, but that might just be a limitation of the smaller team. But it's still a fun game. I think so. Scott, that's an ID game, right? You follow everything in the ID program, don't you? Paging Scott, where you go?
Yo, I'm
eating a Rice Krispie treat.
Yeah. I'm here. I had to grab something real quick. What's up? Go for it again.
You're a dick.
Fail number two.
Dangerous Driving. That's an ID program, right?
Yes, that is an ID at Xbox game. Correct. Right. As well. Just like Flutter Bombs.
Dropping F-bombs like a... No.
Oh, there we go. Like there's the pun. That was the one. Flutterbomb.
I don't always drop F-bombs, but when I do, I drop Flutter Bombs.
Oh, nice. Man.
Memeify it.
Oh, boy. What are we going to do with you?
Can that be the show title? We don't always drop F-bombs.
I but could.
When we do, we drop a Flutter Bombs interview with the developer.
That would be a very long title, Scott.
Yes.
We don't always drop F-bombs, but when we do, we drop Flutter Bombs with an interview with the developer of Flutter Bombs.
Perfect.
.mp3.
This is why Carnage isn't allowed to handle like any Flutter Bombs, so we put Flutter stuff. Bomb in
Flutter Bomb. I don't know. Don't ask.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man. They love me.
Scott, what are we going to do with you?
I actually saw a comment on Twitter, too, where someone was saying a Flutter Bomb sounds like a butterfly fart.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. That makes sense.
That's fantastic.
Boy.
Now I have, like, horrible mental images. With that.
I imagine that butterfly farts probably smell like unicorn vomit.
Just litter, imagining all these smells.
You know, it's like flowers and candy.
Yeah, glitter and cupcake batter.
Now, if your game included Smell-O-Vision, then it would be $20 for sure. Worth it.
Oh, good God. Well, I know we've been chatting for a good while right now. Is there anything about the game that you wanted to bring up that we didn't?
No, I don't think. Thanks for streaming it and playing it and being awesome.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoyed it.
And, you know.
No, he didn't mean you, Carnage.
Who streamed it just before the show? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm here to answer any questions. If anyone else needs to reach out or ask questions, you know, feel free to drop your suggestions to me. And it's an evolving game. So, like, yeah, if you have ideas or you think things should change, I'm open and receptive to feedback.
That was awesome to hear.
How can people get in touch with you and stay up to date with you?
info@earthborninteractive.com or just Twitter. It's @earthborndev. Just kind of send me a direct tweet or something.
I'll post it in chat there. There's the link.
Oh, Scott, you're so caring. And
I had to make up for my two fails, see?
That's where did you disappear to?
Allowed to be a mod.
Where did you disappear to?
It was 10 seconds.
10 seconds that we were addressing you.
The other room.
Oh, Jesus.
He had to go fart. God. That's what he's trying to say. It was a flutter fart.
Oh, man.
A flutter fart.
That's the title of the show.
Flutter fart.
Butterfly farts? Or flutter farts?
Flutter farts.
Flutter farts and cosmic shrimps.
Nice. Oh, my Lord. Cole, Scott, did either of you have any other questions you wanted to ask before we wrap this up?
Didn't you want to ask about the company logo at the beginning and its retro look? You said it yesterday.
Why did the company logo look so, I don't know how to put it, vintage compared to the rest of the game?
Yeah, muddy. I think muddy is a good word, too. So that's actually kind of a funny story. That was the tree in that image. I created that tree when, like, we had just lost a major job at this previous firm I worked at, and nobody had anything to do. And so I was sitting there in a 3D program and decided I'd make this little tree. And then I went home that night and decided to turn it into a little painting of a sunset behind a tree. And then eventually thought it would be kind of fun to put that in the background of a, like, a company, whatever, company logo thing. And to me, that's the 1980s. Like, that's the 1980s logo that pops up for a studio before some kind of, like, I don't know, a movie back in the day that you would watch. But then, like, back now or coming to times now, you'd see sometimes the same studios never change their movie to begin with. And you'll see this really old, like, you know, it's just some old guy that runs the studio and he's like, no, we're not changing the logo. The logo's staying. Oh, yeah. Wiped the logo. We're leaving the logo. We know it's 2020 or 40 or whatever it's going to be.
Fuck,
and like, and I really like that concept of like just this grumpy old guy sitting back in his studio saying, we're not changing the logo. And
keeping it vintage.
Yeah, vintage.
I just loaded up the game again to see what you're saying, and yes, it's awesome.
It's got like that cheesy, you know, flashy lettering in a linear fashion because that was like the limits of the tools we had back then.
Like VHS tape quality on purpose.
Yeah, like some guy had to paint each frame of the film or something like that.
Hand painted, frame by frame.
Yeah. So I don't know. I definitely get a lot of flack for that, and one day I will change it. But until that day, it's fun.
Yeah, it threw us off. It changed our expectations of what the game was going to be, and then the game started, and we're like, wow, this is a really good looking game. It didn't match the title screen at all, or the developer screen.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that the title image, the equivalent of the box cover on the Xbox, is just the U4
Unreal
icon?
Oh my god, icon. Yeah. That was a huge fuck up on my part, and I'll see if I can put a link to the actual logo here. Dev blog in here. Here's a put in the podcast.
Oh, let me put. You got probably permission.
I don't know.
Otherwise,
no, I think links are fine.
Oh, okay.
I think so. Here,
so that that link, the first image in that link, is. Is supposed to be the cover art, and that did not somehow get involved in the build upload when we released to the store, and that's a huge embarrassment. So, like, I feel terrible. I hope I don't get sued by Epic.
Yeah, that is pretty.
Yeah, I know that games always can change their, like, multiple times I've seen games change their icons, so yeah, I'm sure that's not a issue. I'm sure it'll be fixed.
Well, yeah, it is. It's fixed in next build, but I'm still going through certification to get the next build up uploaded. So.
Gotcha.
Any idea when we could expect that?
Well, if things go well during cert this week, hopefully by end of week. That's looking on the positive side, but you never know. So it could be a week and a half to 2 weeks. But the changes will be done this weekend, and the submission will be this weekend. So we'll see from there.
Hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, I know once it's in Microsoft's hands, sometimes it takes a little extra just to get all their updates for all the games, like certain days scheduled. But yeah, cool.
Awesome. Well, Hadar, it has been amazing having you on the show, chatting with you. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more show in just a little bit. I'm sure we'll have a handful of reviews that we got to get through. Thanks again for coming on and chatting with us. It's been fun.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you guys are awesome. I enjoyed talking with you, and thanks for dropping some flutter bombs.
Do you want to have one more time to tell us what the game is, where we could get it, how much it is, all that fun stuff?
Yeah, sure. The game is Flutter Bombs. It's a nature-themed twin-stick shooter. It's on Xbox One for $20 right now, and it's fun.
I just posted the store link as well in chat, so anyone there can check it out on Xbox One.
Yeah, pick it up. Enjoy it. It's really good stuff. I enjoyed it a lot.
We. Yep.
Good stuff.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Do you have any final words to end the show or the interview? Whatever. Words.
If you're going to drop bombs, drop flutter bombs.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another big thanks to Hadar for coming on and chatting with us, as well as Cole and Scott for both being here as well. Always good to have Cole on a weekend show. I don't know why I call it a weekend show. I record it on the weekend, but it's still a fucking Wednesday episode. So I got to get my shit together. Right, Purnell? You know.
I know this is a weekend in my mind, which means it's a weekend wherever else it needs to be. So you weekend it out.
I mean, these used to be weekend recordings and it would release on like Monday. And then everyone's like, oh, I can't record on Sunday. Could I record on Monday instead? And it's like, all right, the episode's Tuesday. Now people are like, I can't record on Monday. Could I record on Tuesday? Motherfucker, show's on Wednesday.
I mean, it used to be our playground and used to be, but you know how it goes. Your childhood dream. You would run to it and then it's just gone.
Yeah,
I'm really bad at this. I was like, I can clearly get a League of Their Own in here.
I'm just waiting for the episode to inevitably get back to a weekend. So I'll just keep calling it the weekend show.
It could happen. I'm sure it could happen. So wait, but when I came on board, you were already doing Monday records. So you're saying they used to do Sundays?
Yeah, used to record Sunday, release on Monday.
I guess I can understand why that would shift, though, because usually people are like tired from their weekends or whatever. And it's like, let's just do it on Monday. I'm already going to be dropped dead from my work. May as well at least have something to wrap up the day that I can enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And then for me, it became, I got to get better on that because my thing is either board game night or I can use this time to do a little bit more playing. So what the heck's not to like about that? But I can definitely get what you're coming from there. Because also at the same time, if I was back on that schedule, it would just balance out in its own right anyway, but then the board game nights would become a factor again. I'm like, we'll play board games. Call it Tuesday. That's what sucks. There's one board game night I want to go to, and that's usually for this show. And there's another board game night in this area that I want to go to, but that's when the other podcast records. So it's like they both chose days that I don't have. Tuesday would have been fine otherwise. Wednesday would have been fine. Friday would have been fine. Nope.
Well, that's why we record on Tuesdays now.
That's right. The weekends are here, baby. We make come to SML where the weekend never stops.
When you're unemployed, the weekend never ends.
That is also very true. Game for day.
Kill me.
look at one of those like work from home deals. I got a buddy up there who's like, she works from home. She works for, believe it or not, a truck driving company working from home. She just does ties into their computer from her home and just works. Like it's told they're out there. I mean, admittedly, they're not the easiest to find, but they exist. Might be a schnick. Even I'm applying for a job like that. Like maybe I can get a job from Seattle, even though I don't live in Seattle because they'll let me work remotely. The dream anyway. It's the dream.
See, I work from home as well. I call it this shitty podcast.
Hey, you.
This is my job. This is not a shitty podcast. This is my life.
This is not a shitty podcast.
It's shitty.
This is a podcast of grain and wholesome food consumption. Brussels sprouts, man. Brussels sprouts in this podcast. There's nothing wrong with this podcast. You could tell this podcast has a healthy diet.
High in fiber. Makes you shit.
That's right. We're not shit. We're the shit, and it makes you shit. It's a good thing.
We are the shit. Purnell, you are the shit. This show is the shit. It's kind of shitty, but it is the shit.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest here. Do you really want to be like free? Well, aside from the monetary part, who wouldn't? But do you really want to be IGN? I don't want to deal with that nonsense. The every time you put out a review, here, this is me talking about a game I like or not like. This is just me giving a general opinion of a game that I didn't have to pay for, which means that you, the listener, can get a general understanding of the game without having to pay for it. It's just everyone helps each other out. But instead, people are like, clearly, you're a professional game reviewer, and you missed section 3, paragraph 2 of this game, which, no. We can at least say, look, we play games, we love games, but ultimately, we're still hobbyists reviewing games. We're not professional reviewers. I mean, don't give us this weird BS that, for some reason, professional reviewers get screwed with all the time. I'll never understand that. Never. It drives me crazy. Like the Sekiro reviews that were popping off recently. Like Tim reviewed it for this show, right?
Which one?
Sekiro.
Yeah.
I'm going to wager that Tim put some time in, put a good amount of time, but he probably didn't beat the game before the review because the game's freaking hard. Like he.
I don't know how far he got. I'm not sure.
I'm going to wager he He probably got pretty far, but I would bet money that he didn't beat the game before the episode review because it's just too difficult to just get through in that amount of time. But he was able to get some time and say, I played this game. Here's my understanding of it from my perspective. I got this many items equipped. You know, this is how the game works. And I had a great time with it. Did I beat it? Fuck no. But it was fun and I enjoyed it. But IGN gets the, well, you work 40 hours a week playing video games and you didn't put your best guy on the game, which means that you didn't give a good review because you didn't get through the entirety of Sekiro in 4 days. What? Like, what are you talking about? No. Like, stuff drives me freaking crazy, man. I swear to God. And then, you know, the worst part is, this is probably me getting crapped on the internet later, but it's like, the same time, like you say, for example, we'll do a review of a game here, right? And I'm like, okay. And I think you'll attest, this show, both of us, are pretty fair when it comes to reviews. No, we're never like, this game is a piece of shit, never buy it unless it's to wipe your butt. Like, we never do anything crazy like that. We're generally...
I like to pride my show on being fair to games, and if we have negatives, we're not overly negative. Like, I don't want to be Jim Sterling. I don't want my show to be like Jim Sterling that just shits on things to shit on things. I would rather be constructive with the criticism. Like when someone has a negative review, I usually ask, what would you do to fix it? So if the developers are listening and they hear us say, unfortunately, we got to give it a deny it. But if you do this and this and this, it could easily turn the game around and be a lot better.
No, see, I like that too. Like, cause don't get me wrong. I sometimes do enjoy the railing, but that's more so when you're doing it at this stage, it's less about, you know, railing and more about being constructive. Now, if I'm hanging out with some friends at the bar drinking, like we do, the what? But that's different. We're just putzing around. That's not me being constructive. It's me being stupid. But by the same token, like we do these reviews, you give a repute opinion like that, and we'll state our claims and what can be fixed, whatever. So someone will go, oh, I ain't listening to that review, guys. Screw that. And you'll go to their friend. Yo, what do you think of this game? Yo, it's the shit. What do you like about it? And just go buy it, man. It's real good. I love it.
That's all I
need. Yeah, real helpful. That's all I need to hear. Like, or even worse. We just biggest piece of shit I've ever played. The worst game I've ever played in my life. What was so bad about? Man, the fuck, it's stupid. Just don't buy it. Okay, that's good enough for me. He ain't like it. Why? He didn't say. So it doesn't mean anything. No, but that's what happens. That's what happens out there more than anything. I mean, we all have friends that can give good criticism and reviews, but at that point, they also have to pay $60 or whatever to pick up the game and spend the time with it to come out and go, all right, man, this is how I feel about it. And I actually established this at one point, too. That makes it different. Have you ever bought a game willy-nilly, and then you started playing it, and it doesn't rub you the right way? Mm-hmm. But since you spent the money to get it, your mind kind of does a little bit of a dance. Or you're kind of justifying the things you don't like sometimes because you spent the money and you don't want to feel like you wasted money because you can't return it to the store anymore. It's yours, you know. So you're like, no, it's not bad, man. It's not a bad thing. So you're telling me the frame rate drops to like 10 frames per second in a game that's pulled to run 60 and it's action based? No, man. It's not like that. You see, look, the slowdown allows you to process the environment so that you can succeed where you would fail otherwise. Like, no, that's just you justifying the fact that it drops from 60 to 10 in an action game regularly.
No.
But whereas if you didn't pay for something, the only thoughts are, do I like it? Do I not? If I do or don't, why don't I? There's no, well, I got to justify the fact that I bought this game. It's just, no, they gave it to me to give honest feedback. Here it is. You know, I think there's something to be said about that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm jumping the gun on that a little bit, but that's honestly how I think about it. Like, it helps.
Oh, is there a bad game you're going to talk about tonight?
Well, we don't know.
Should we find out?
We should incur and discover together.
Awesome, because we have a lot of games to talk about tonight. We have a good chunk of them. This is going to be a long episode, so we're going to have to try getting through these fairly quick. But first game to talk about tonight is called Earth Defense Force Iron Rain, developed by Yuke's, published by D3 Publisher, released April 11th on the PS4 for $59.99. Earth Defense Force, Save the World Without Hope, an action third-person shooter featuring the furious battles of EDF and its soldiers on the stage of ruined Earth. You will become an EDF soldier and fight against the invaders from outer space to regain peace. Purnell, tell us about it.
Earth Defense Force, I think, as a series, it is a very guilty pleasure in that they kind of hopped hardcore on the cheesy voices and wacky scenario and just said, hey, you're out here killing things in mass and you're going to enjoy it. It's like Musou, but fun for me. But I think with this one, they tended to get a little more serious about it. Like they try to have like a full, like full on narrative that goes between each stage and chapter. But even though I don't think it necessarily helps the game, it doesn't really hurt you. It's just another take on the familiar gameplay.
Yeah.
So my take on that is I enjoyed playing through story elements, though I could have taken or left them. But by the same token, sometimes you're like, hey, that poor character, maybe I can help them out. I don't want them to get attacked by this giant ant, whatever. But the gameplay itself is a treat. I had a lot of fun playing this game, as simple as it is. It borderline overwhelms you with things you can acquire and unlock. So as you're playing through the game, you will take on stages. And on each stage, you'll get a general objective or a sequence of objectives. Like it might be like, okay, first step is to get to the location or the touchdown point. And then next step is to, okay, destroy this target. Oh, crap, this giant monster showed up. Now your target has switched. Your goal has switched to take out giant walking mech man. Which also I don't remember a ton about some of the older ones, but in case I'm missing a beat here, I remember the earlier ones were mostly like giant insects. In those games, like you're pretty much, hey, insects are on the prowl, take them out. In this game, there's some robots and mess in this too, which is kind of cool. Like giant walking, hawking mech monsters, and then giant like mutant monsters sometimes too.
Are there still bugs at least?
Oh, there's definitely still bugs. Okay, if there weren't bugs, I'd be disappointed.
Okay, because we have a bug theme going this episode since our interview was for Flutter Bombs, a top-down twin-stick shooter of bugs.
So, oh, nice.
There's more bug murder here.
Oh, yeah. And this is some solid fun bug murder, too. So, like, there are a variety of different guns you can earn. There's, like, the typing, like, type-wise, there is the, like, there's assault rifles, grenade launchers, sniper rifles, and rocket launchers, others, like, basic explosive weapons, you know, spread gun damage, you know, rapid-fire damage, concussion damage. If you name it, it's a type of gun that exists in this game that can be utilized in some fashion. And they come with a variety of stats. And the way they work is that to unlock them, as you play the game, you will unlock new weapons that can be purchased at the end game shop. And also, when you kill monsters in the field, they will drop like energy cores. They come in three colors, yellow, red, and blue, varying rarities from each. And when you go to the shop after having unlocked a weapon, you can use a combination of those resources and money to buy new guns, and you can equip it into one of your weapon slots and pretty much switch between them on the fly. Keeps you moving, keeps you grooving. And one thing I like about this game also is that ammo, you're not like running around the map trying to find ammo on the ground. Cause you know, when you play games like this and you just want to blast dudes, but you're always worried, do I have enough ammo? Am I going to run out of bullets? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. It's beautiful. When you run out of bullets, you just reload and go again. But you have pretty much an infinite stream of bullets for any gun, and I adore that.
Nice.
Because that means that I don't have to ration bullets. And if you know me, when I play games, I'm always rationing bullets, and it means I end up using the worst gun all the time. It's like ultra hard mode unintentionally, but also intentionally. But the game is very fast paced. It's furious. I like the fact that the difficulty is tied to each stage, not across the game. So you can go into a level, pick normal mode, then come back, do hard mode if you want. We can just do all hard mode, your choice. But you're not like picking a difficulty and then locked into it for the entire game.
That's good.
I love it. Like, I have appreciation for this game, and I forgot to even mention the armor you can wear. So you get a variety of different suits in this game, and the suits determine how your character operates. So you have, like, my favorite in this game was the basically like a rock one where you like kind of rocket pack. I mean, you use a special move because every armor has a specific type of special move to it. When you use a special move in this one, you can kind of take off and fly around the stage. To be perfectly honest, even though there's other different things, they're all called energy moves. Even though there's other energy moves, I see no reason to use any of them but the one that lets you fly around the freaking map. Like, look at tackle guys. Who the hell cares? I can fly. I don't care. I want to fly up top onto a building and take a sniper shot at this giant hulking beast. Like, why do I want to run in this stuff or burst? I don't give a shit. I just want to fly. But I like that. It's a fantastic element to that there. And you could also spend a lot of time upgrading between getting like the different suits. You could also upgrade like your hit points, which is kind of a funny element to the game. Usually in games, you level up and like you make most like the suit will attribute your hit points. Like the better your armor or something, the more hit points you got. In this game, you just spend money to level up your hit point capacity. So it's like you can use whatever type of suit you want and focus on the stats to it, like it's like the defense or the item usage or whatever. And your hit points are so a completely separate stat, which makes it easy to just choose the suit you want and not worry about taking a hit point detriment to them. Even though, of course, if your defense goes down, we'll still lose that hit point capacity faster. But I digress. Anyway, one thing that makes me kind of sad, though, I understand it's more so about the game itself is played than anything else, is one of the grading mechanics for when you finish stages. Because, oh, by the way, when you beat levels, they grade you. Oh, shocker. But it's not, it's not 3 stars, so that's that at least.
What scale do they grade you on? Letters?
It's letters, though it's kind of funny I said it, because each category is graded by stars, but then the final grade is a letter. So you can get 3 stars, but that's not the max. They go to 4 stars or a big giant star. They mess with your head in this game. But you can go up to, like, of course, S rank or whatever. But items in this game, whether it's like health kits or grenades or things of that nature, you can equip a bunch of them based on the capacity that your armor provides. But when you use them on the stage, it decreases your grade. So, of course, as that means is that I almost never use items. And I was so concerned about my grade that I almost never even wanted to equip an item at risk of using it by mistake in a panic, which was all my grade going down. Like, I would maybe equip, like, one set of healing items, because if I'm trying to get through the level and I'm about to die and it's like, I just want to finish it, then I'll pop the healing item just to be done with it. But otherwise, no, I didn't want to use healing. I didn't want to use items because I didn't want my grade to suffer. But that's a small complaint. I mean, the game as a whole is enjoyable. I mean, slow down. A little bit, but nothing that made the game just broken. It was very manageable and action-packed. Monsters were it was constantly crap on the screen. Like I said, it felt like a Musou game with giant destructive critters. I also like, I forgot to mention, I like the fact that you can pretty much just destroy the environment, like wreck it. You'll be on a level and you'll be like trying to shoot at a guy and then the monster will just destroy the building. And it's like, well, I guess I don't have cover anymore. Or the opposite. You might just want to just say, screw it, and just shoot a rocket launcher at a building that a bunch of ants are running around. And they'll all just fall down, but you destroyed the building we're running around on. I like stuff like that. It's pretty, they give you like nice little set pieces on each stage to play around and destroy. There's vehicles you can drive around in sometimes, though, honestly, when you have the cool flying armor, why the hell do you want to bother? Just fly where you want to go. It's cooler that way. And I forgot to mention, I think this is new to the series, so I should probably refer to it. There's also something called Overdrive in this game. And what that is once you can use it once per level. And when you do use it, your character will kind of go into like a hyperactive state. They'll run faster. They'll shoot faster. They'll reload faster. They just do everything faster. They become a kind of a killing machine, but it's temporary. So you pretty much only want to use it when you're in a real crutch. But it does come in handy, and some of the levels kind of make you use it. Like, if you get through the stage without using Overdrive, you're a beast. So use it. Just get it out. Just dump it somewhere. But it's an enjoyable game. Like, I found it very enjoyable. I actually like it more, though this is going to sound, I'm sure there's probably some like hardcore EDF player listening to this going, that's bullshit. But I honestly like this more than one of the earlier ones I played. It was a ways back, mind you. We're talking Earth Defense Force on the PlayStation Vita or something, but I like this one more than my previous experience with the series.
Nice. So overall,
I'm denying it.
Overall, $60. What do you say?
I think it's a buy it, especially if you're already in the series. It makes a lot of positive changes while keeping enough just as well as you like it. It's a fun time, and I would dump the money for it.
Sounds good.
It is good.
Well, hopefully the streak continues, because the next game to talk about is called Nelk in the Legendary Alchemist's 8 Liars of the New World, developed by Gust, published by Koei Tecmo Games, released March 26th on the Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99, an 8-liar town built together with legendary alchemists. This title aims to combine the slice-of-life atmosphere of living in a town and collaborating with various characters and the exaltation that comes from successfully governing a town and expanding your world. Purnell, tell us about it.
Well, I feel like my thoughts on this one will vary heavily depending on what you're looking for in the game. So when I requested this review when it came down the pike, I was honestly expecting an Atelier game. And I've played, well, I'll admit I fell off the rails a bit on the newer releases. I was knee-deep in them in the older games. We're talking whether it was the RPG series or Atelier Mana.
It's Atelier?
Yeah, I probably got it wrong. I'd just say Atelier. Or Tellier,
I've been saying Atelier for fucking ever. So I'm probably wrong.
You know, honestly, I just roll with it because it's a made up word anyway. here's where we go to the dictionary and get proven wrong. But anyway,
it's like the name. I didn't know if it's Nelk or Nelky.
Oh, I just say Nelk. Okay. I say Nelk. But I've played like some of the older ones, so I had an understanding of just how the formula works. But this game is not that. And if you're coming into it expecting another Atelier game, so they got me questioning how I pronounce it. If you're coming in expecting another Atelier game, you're going to be sorely, sorely disappointed. Don't do that. But due to the fact that I was trying to review the game, not reviewing based on my expectations, I immediately flushed it out the window once I realized what I was getting into and played it anew. And what I came away with is that while it is not the Ateliers I know and love, I kind of like a bit of what I was doing with it. It's a different style of game. So the idea here is that your main character is not an alchemist. Far from it. She thinks it's really cool, though, but she herself is not skilled in the art. What she is a business-savvy daughter of an aristocrat who is coming to town to help a couple of country bumpkins build their town up into a metropolis. And I say that jokingly, but seriously, because I'm kidding you not, these guys don't even know how to pick up weeds off. They're like, hey, here's a pebble. You could turn this into a sling. A what? A rock. What did you do with rocks? Like, I was amazed, like, how the writing laid it out so that these guys, they had to make these main characters out to not understand that people use grass to make medicine. Like, in the real world, most people know that you can use, like, you know, floral ingredients to make medicine. You might not know which ones, but you know it works. But I digress. It was hilarious to watch them like school these people on how to make sense of alchemy or how to mix things. But anyway, Nelk comes to town and her goal is to build this town up and make it also kind of sort of impress her father, but not. So what ends up happening is the game immediately becomes a sort of town building sim. You show up, you have money, a small bit of money, and a dream. And each weekday in the game formula, you will have to build locations such as like gardens or shops or ateliers. Just call them alchemy shops, damn it. and then by utilizing those features, you can grow ingredients. And then growth is based on things you've come across or what the location can provide. So you need to grow or produce ingredients, which can then in turn be sold at the shops you produce in town, which of course generates revenue for the village. So you kind of work on this system, but at the same time, as you play the game and the population increases, you'll also meet alchemists that will show up at town, all of which are famous Atelier characters from the series. So this kind of works as a sort of, hey, here's the greatest hits lineup of the Atelier series. And I was actually kind of pleased that the first character you meet is from a game we never got in the States, but I know of her because she was a character in the RPG Cross Edge on the PlayStation 3. I was like, oh, I know who she is. That's pretty cool. Marie, by the way, for those who are like, who the hell are you talking about? But anyway, so as these characters come into town, you can utilize them in two different ways. One, you can put them in the different facilities. Like if you want, say, for example, let's go with Marie. She's an alchemist. So all the characters have like variety of stats in like, let's just say like gardening or shopkeeping or just other things like different facilities. And based on those grades determines how well they'll do in those positions when you put them there to man a location. Of course, if you don't have anyone to man a location, the game will give you a generic one. So you're not, it's like you can't build without a person. It's just the generic guy's never going to be as good as a dedicated person.
Yeah.
So you put these people in these locations and they can run them for you and generate income or whatever. The other purpose for the characters you can recruit in the game as you meet them is every weekend, as in not weekday where you're planning your town, and I can describe a little bit more about the town building in a second, you can go on a weekend jaunt. And what that would be is that you can do a few things. You can go and hang out with the people that you've met, like your more specific characters, and build friendship and bonds with them. And as you build up those bonds, which of course comes in the form of nice little cute story vignettes, you'll gain access to new facilities you can construct and build, new requests from people that they want, which will in turn give you more that you can do. And it's just fun. Why would you play a sim type game and not bond with characters when they offer to you? What's wrong with you? Don't be antisocial. Hang with your girls. But in addition to like doing things like that, there's also a sort of exploration element. I use that term extremely loosely, but it's still a slightly enjoyable thing. So there are not quite dungeons, but there are environments you can go to and explore. And when you go out to them, the game will cost you, require for you to spend money called investing to open up a location. And when you spend the money, you can kind of go there to search for materials to use in your town facilities. And this is not a dungeon. I must say, hear this real loud, folks. This is not a dungeon. There are no dungeons in this game. This is not an RPG. This is the closest going to get to what you'd be considered an RPG. So you go to a location, the game will auto-scroll you from left to right or whatever. And as you are walking, the characters will have a kind of conversation, just have like a little random dialogue to kind of make you feel like they're hanging out with each other. And every once in a while, you'll stumble across items on the ground which you can pick up, and that becomes your harvested goods. You can press the R trigger button to make them walk faster because you are on a time limit while you're out here, and there is a beginning and an end to the course you're walking on. And there is a point to getting to the end of a course. Now, as you are running, you will get there to the end faster, but you won't pick up as much stuff because you're too busy running to stop and smell the damn roses. So you got to kind of balance between running and walking and make sure you get all the stuff. Also, every once in a while, a battle will break out while you're walking from left to right. And when the battle breaks out, you go into like a bit of a skirmish where you'll have action characters in the front and support characters in the back. Support usually being like the atelier type characters. Action characters, you can control them as there's like a time gauge that goes across the top of the screen. When it gets to the right, you can use a basic attack, which in turn does damage to the opponent and also fills your drive gauge up. The more your drive gauge is filled per character, the faster their turns will come up. And it will give you access to other attacks that they can do or abilities. But when you use those abilities, your drive gauge goes back down, which will in turn make your turns come slower. So there's a bit of a fine dance between knowing when to use your drive and when not to. Support characters, on the other hand, you cannot control at all. When their turn comes up, they just use one of their abilities that they have banked up, and that's that. But their drive gauge exists as well. And when their drive gauge is full, you can press A at any time to trigger their special moves. And that's kind of nice just to kind of do that. So it's not, you're not going to be out there equipping your characters with the best stuff. You're not exploring dungeons. You're just fighting monsters because they're nuisances on your path to discovering what kind of new grass you can find on the ground. That's about the gist of it. But believe it or not, I had fun with this. It was an enjoyable little romp. I mean, the main goal of the game is to build your town up to be a decent metropolis, while also filling the goals that your father kicks down the curb to you, because every once in a while he will send you a request like get your population up or build these five types of facilities before the clock runs up. And if you don't fulfill his request, the game will end. So that is your main driving force. Make daddy happy or daddy will be upset. And then, of course, the alternative side story element is that you're trying to find like the great, you know, Wakamaju tree. And I wasn't really paying attention to that. I was in it for the slice of life stuff personally, that and the town building. I didn't really care about the actual plot, but that's just me. I'm that kind of guy. I just want to see kids hang out and have fun mixing wacky potions and stuff. But like I said, I think the game is good. I think it's worth coming in with an open mind because this is a spinoff of the Atelier series. This is not Atelier Rorona or Meruru or whatever wacky many other names they've come up with over the years.
Sule, they have some crazy ass names.
Yeah, I think what's it? I just went over here for the Switch and I even play. It's like something in the Mysterious Paintings or something. I still need to boot up. Like, there's so many of them. There's too many.
There are.
But they're good games. And this is not one of them, but it is still good. I honestly think it's worth a try. Just you need to come with an open mind and not expect the traditional style of game. You still get your slice of life. You get some cool little blendings of the various characters across the Atelier series. And it's relaxing, too. I didn't really feel stressed out while I was playing it. They'll Sounds keep good. Multiple save files.
Are you save scumming it?
You kind of have to an extent. I mean, you don't want to find yourself, you know, building your town in whatever way, and then dad's request comes down. It's like, oh, shit. I don't think I have enough time to do this. I haven't even bothered going down this road. Sure would be nice if I had a save file from 3 weeks back that lets me kind of tweak my old game plan a bit. You might never need it, to be blunt, but wouldn't it be nice to have if you did?
Very true.
Yeah, so just kind of like have one save. Like, I think the logic would be you have a save floating around out there, and whenever you get your whenever your dad sends a request, kind of ride the wave there. Maybe even make a save file there as your second save file. And if you can't pull it off, then you either A, go back to the save file when you first learn what he wanted from you, or B, go to a save file slightly before that so you can kind of bone up for it in preparation of him giving it to you. But hopefully you never need to do any of that.
Fingers crossed. You know what the game is missing, though?
Pernell.
Bug murder.
I don't know, man. I mean, a lot of bugs get dumped in those alchemy pots, I'm sure.
Were there?
A little bug crawls a little too close to the pot. Boom! Special potion. Just drink it. What's in it? I ain't telling. Just drink it. It's delicious.
I feel like since we had Flutter Bombs and Earth Defense Force, we need more bug murder.
Well, that's coming.
But it is coming, because the next game to talk about is called Bugs Must Die. Developed and published by DG Games Workshop, released April 5th on Steam for $11.99. Shooting them with a machine gun, blasting them with missiles, dashing them with a vehicle, whipping them with an energy chain, or burning them with napalm, no matter how you get it done, bugs must die. Pernell, tell us about it.
I can tell you two things. One, I am really sad that I got to figure out how to get this game to work on my computer, because I want it to work so badly. I don't know what's wrong. This is driving me crazy. But I digress. That's a personal Pernell problem. The thing I need to say, though, is that I'm a flat out set. Bugs Must Die is one of the main reasons why I like reviewing games at all. Because if I didn't get access to this game because somebody wanted us to review it and I got a chance to try it, I wouldn't even know it existed. But knowing that it existed and having played it, this game is spectacular. I have a ton of fun with it. I played the demo, was it last year? I guess it was sometime. It was a while ago. And I came back to this version of it, and I'm still having a great freaking time. It is a joy, and it is not easy. They make you work. This is a flat-out comparison to get out the way. If you're familiar with the classic game Jackal,
hell yeah,
then this is a just-buy-the-damn game. I'm just going to lay it out there. But if you're not familiar with Jackal, the way this game works is it's a stage-by-stage-based game. You control one of multiple vehicles, so you can just select at the beginning of a stage. But you control a vehicle and you have to progress through sections of the level, killing a ridiculous number of insectoids and insectoid jerk asses. sometimes it's like mechanical stuff too, like cannons and turrets and stuff like that. But ultimately you're killing bugs. And each level will also kind of give you like a set of instructive goals, like maybe like free these mantis captives or tear through this boss or destroy this door or something like that. Basically, it gives you a lot of excuses to blow shit up.
Always good.
It's very good. And they give you tons of weaponry with which to do so. So you have a set of guns. You start out with one, but as you play through stages and you kill monsters and find your way into doorways and stuff, you'll find other guns. And when you find those guns, they become permanently yours. Like, you don't just find it for the stage. When the level's over, you keep it, and it goes in your repository that you can equip to go in to another level with as part of your loadout. And there's a variety of guns, like a lot of guns in this game. It's a good number. There's also a set of sub-weapons that work the same way, where you'll find them in a level, and once you find them, they're yours to keep. There's a variety of things, like there's like shields, there's drones, there's bombs. There's a lot of different things, and you're going to be utilizing all of those things, because enemies come at you hard and fast. and they do not screw the heck around. It's a very adrenaline pumping game as you're moving your vehicle around, dodging stuff, trying to avoid getting the crap beaten out of you, and just genuinely having a good time. And the music is actually pretty decent as you're doing it. I enjoy the music. And graphically, it stands out to me too. It's very colorful. It's not drab at all. And it keeps you moving. Like, it's very pump. It has a nice pump to it. And like I said, the vehicle that you're controlling is very responsive. I never had any issues with controls. And worth mentioning, probably one of my favorite aspects of this game, and I don't think I've ever really played another game that did this. So you're fighting bugs. They're being real dicks. But you're holding on as best you can. Then boom, you took one shot too many and you are dead. Game over. Nah, not really. That's a lie. It's not game over. What actually happens is your tank is destroyed and your escape vehicle comes out. You get a little tiny driving car. And there's multiple types. You can equip them later as you unlock them. But you get a tiny car that if it gets hit one more time, you die. You lose access to all of your sub-weapons and all your main guns. It's just this escape vehicle with one gun. But it feels so exhilarating to just drive. It's like, oh, crap, okay, down to the wire. You're driving this thing, which is faster than your normal car, by the way. It moves like a bullet. And this is mowing jerks down. And you know that this is the end of the line. There's no hit points or anything. Just one hit and you're dead. But if you last long enough, you will – it only happens once per level that I noticed, though. But if you live long enough, you will get a one-up dropped for you as in a form of air support. And you will get your tank back without upgrades or anything, but you'll be back in the business.
Nice.
Oh, and also worth mentioning about the guns, they can all be upgraded too. So let's go with the base gun. That's the easiest to talk about. You have the machine gun. It fires three bullets at a time and goes. Brrr. So during levels, you can find a P icon. You pick that up. Now your gun's at level two. It starts at level zero. So you pick it up and go to level one. And level one, it gives you like, you know, it fires a little faster with three bullets. Level two fires four bullets. Level three, five bullets and fast. And it does a certain number of power, whatever. But when you beat a level and you get money from either destroying stuff and killing enemies to like a reward at the end of the level, you can then take that money back to the main hub shop and you can spend it to upgrade the gun's damage potential. You can spend it to upgrade the reload speed, and you can spend it to upgrade just what level it starts at when you start a level. So if you're tired of the machine gun starting at level zero, you can spend the money. You always start the level with machine gun at level one. Nice. So you're already ready to take out business, and you get for all of the guns you unlock, which means you'll be unlocking stuff till the cows come home. And that is good, again, because the game is not easy in a good way. You'll be working hard to beat bosses in this game. And also just the mobs of enemies that are coming at you. Like, I can't stress, and this isn't even me just like being like generous. I'm being sincere. I can't stress how much I like playing this game. It is a lot of fun. If I'm not sure if you're familiar with this game, but another game that it gave me positive vibes of, there was a game on PlayStation 3 I used to play back me called Renegade Ops.
I played that on 360.
It's so, as you know, I was on 360 platform because Mike and I played it co-op. No, yes, it was so damn good. It was another one of those games where we didn't even know existed. We just kind of blind purchased it together, and it became one of our favorite games on the system. This game could totally be that. Please come to consoles, though. I don't know what the odds are because they had like a little weird pop-up in the middle of the game where it's like, if you can sell this many copies, we're going to go to consoles. Please sell more copies. I would like to have had this on like the Switch or something, especially in a case where I could just plug and play, just boot it up and run it, because I really like it. And when my friend takes his computer back, I don't know if I'll ever get to play it again. But right now, I'm enjoying it, and I have to think it's a great game.
Awesome. Fantastic. Yeah, I've been bugging them to bring it to Xbox too. So there's a lot to do, a lot to kill, a lot to unlock. $12. What do you say?
Oh, it's a total buy. It's an absolute buy. If you're gaming on Steam, you should own this game and you should enjoy it.
Sounds good. We do have to bring up a quick little thing though. You ran into a weird issue with the game. What happened?
I am hoping it's something weird, like I need to defrag my PC or something. But what ended up happening was I was playing the demo, and then I got the review code. And I was like, okay, time to play the game proper. Boot the game up. And it started out playing fine. I went through the tutorial stage and everything. But at the end of the tutorial, I didn't leave the tutorial stage. It was kind of locked there. So I tried to, you know, exit back to the map or to the base, which is where you go to choose your loadout and all that stuff. And it did that. But when I tried to choose the next level to go to, it just didn't do it. Like, it just stayed on the base. And I was getting text box that indicated that I was on the stage, but I think the base screen overlaid the map. So I don't know what happened there, but I couldn't play the game proper. So at that point, I reset the game, tried to go back in, and it never got past the default loading screen. Like, it would go, here's Dragon Class. And then it'd be like this wall, this wallpaper screen, like basically loading up to the main title screen. And it just never would get past that load up screen. I don't know what it is. I tried uninstalling and reinstalling the game. Couldn't get past it. Couldn't fix it. I never managed to resolve the problem. I had a friend of mine loan me a computer that I hooked up and installed it on there, and it worked fine.
Well, but that's good. I know we mentioned the problem to the developers. They said that they haven't encountered it from anybody else. So hopefully it's just some kind of weird isolated incident on your end. But I did want to bring it up and mention it, that there was an issue. Thankfully, you were able to get around it and still play and review the game.
I agree, because honestly, I felt bad. I wanted to play and review it because, again, I like the demo. And if the game itself was good, it deserves to get discussed. It deserves to be talked about.
Indeed.
So,
and it deserves to come to Xbox One so I can buy it.
Honestly, I would buy it there. If I could get on anything that wasn't Steam, I'd buy it. Like, that's another thing worth mentioning about how much I like this game. We get these games for free to review them, okay? Now, as a result of that, even if it's not on my preferred system of choice, when I get the code, if I have the game, I'm going to play it there because I already have it.
Yeah.
If this game came to console, I'd buy it because that's how badly I want to play it on another device that's more fitting to me. I want to be able to play this game on lunch breaks at work, that kind of thing, you know? So it's a good game.
Come to the Switch, come to the Xbox, come to PlayStation, just fucking come to console in general.
Please do. I don't know what the intricacies are of switching from Steam to console, but if there's any way to get through the rigmarole, please do it.
Clearly, you just open up a tab and click on the Xbox One platform button, and it just automatically, magically happens.
Everything migrates over.
Yeah, there's no work required. It's just simple click, and it's done, right? I'm sure that's how it works.
It's magic, baby. Forget it. It's Chinatown.
Anyway, you got one last game to talk about. No more bug murder. This is zombie murder.
No, try deny the guy that got it.
I already asked you. You said to buy it.
Oh, that is true. I did kind of say buy it.
I did.
Oh, well.
You silly bastard, you.
That's what I do. I'm just buggy, I tell you. A little buggy.
Oh, God.
Had to get one more in there.
Last game for you to talk about is called Yet Another Zombie Defense HD, developed and published by Awesome Game Studio, released April 5th on the Switch for $4.99. When you're a lone survivor struggling against waves of enemies who are getting stronger and stronger, your end is inevitable. The important question is, how long can you survive? We covered this one previously on Xbox, so first question right off the bat is, how does it play on the Switch?
Honestly, I'd say it plays pretty well. It's an interesting one of those kinds of games. This is one of those games where when you play it, like, it didn't do a wowing of any sort. But what it does do is it works well. It's a zombie defense game, very much in what the title describes. It says not another, but they're lying to you. It totally is.
It says yet another, not another.
I blame lack of sleep. Anyway, the point is, it is very much a zombie defense game. You are one of four characters. I notice nothing different between them. They're just skins of whoever you want to be. And when you select them, you go into a kind of a flat environment. There's a street lamp and a lot of asphalt. And you start off with one gun, a pistol, and you are tasked with building up a set of defenses. During the, I guess we'll call it the day. There's no timer to this. It's just you have all the time in the world to build up your defenses as long as you have the money. And once you're done and you're ready to go, you request the wave to start. Nightfall comes and the street lamp comes on, and then enemies will shamble in from the sides of the screen, and you have to survive the night, literally. So shoot at jerks, not be bitten by jerks, and kill them, and hopefully not die. Every once in a while, they will also drop money, which you can pick up, ammo, which can we can pick up to reload your guns. And that's the main stuff. I think there was like a speed mod I remember picking up too that really stuck out. Was like a speed up modification and a few other little random bits too that you can pick up and help you survive the night. After each night ends, you go back to the day and you are tasked with using your newfound booty to build up a defense line. And the game gives you a fair number of options. They get a variety of different fences, whether it be like an electrified fence or a normal fence or a fortified fence. There are turrets you can build, in which case when you build the turret, actually that's the interesting I like about this though. The turrets don't work like you typically do in these kinds of games, where usually you buy a turret, and you set it up, and it's done. It's a functional turret. In this game, a turret is actually just the base. You then also have to buy the gun to affix to the base, and then you have to load it up with ammunition so that it can actually do its job. And if you run, if it runs out of bullets, it will stop firing. You have to go put more bullets into it. Sounds kind of like it'd be tedious to some players, but I think that it makes sense in the sense of like playing a defense, a tower defense or zombie defense type game. You should have to manage stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's part of the style, you know? But I like that. I equipped the Uzi to mine and just let the Uzi do all his work while I use something more powerful to mow down guys I felt needed special attention. But there's a variety of different guns, a number of stations, like a Tesla cannon, just crazy, weird stuff. And there's a decent amount of them. And after each night, more zombies, during each night, new zombies might come out. Like you might get like different types that behave differently or take more shots to kill or what have you. And you just kind of go down this road ad nauseum until, I guess, either you survive the nights or you die. I never got to the end, so I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know if there is an end. I think it's just it goes on, and you see how long you can go.
Which is fine by me. I mean, that's just the style of the game. That's the style at the time, like wearing an onion on your belt. But it's just, I mean, it was enjoyable. Like, it didn't do anything special, but it didn't do anything badly either. It was just an enjoyable little game to boot up. I want to go kill some zombies on my lunch break or something.
It is what it says it is. It's yet another zombie defense game.
Yep, which is actually kind of funny in of his right in its own self. Like they don't hide anything. They don't tell you. They don't keep it a secret. Like, this is what you're buying, but it's a functionally solid game. I don't feel like I didn't boot it up and go, well, this is stupid. I didn't boot it up and go, the controls suck. I didn't boot it up and go, oh, like the frame rates, it dropped 10 frames per second. Callback. it's just it worked, and it was enjoyable in how it worked. So I think it's a matter of if that's something you're looking for at this present time. Do you want to play a game where you set up defenses and mow down waves of the undead only to rebuild the defenses the next day or hopefully not even have to and just hoard the money ad nauseum until you die?
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
Until the final day of your life, you will play yet another zombie defense HD. The best part of this game, it's only $5.
That is true. This could totally get a fuck it, why not?
Well, what is your official verdict?
I think it's a fuck it, why not? But also, it's a solid try, too. Like, I think the game is fun. It works. It does its job. But it's also really cheap.
Well, see, fuck it, why not is a step above try it.
Really?
Like, yeah, it's in between try it and buy it. Because it's good, but it's so cheap that fuck it, just buy it.
Oh, well, there it is. I guess I didn't even think about that. In that case, it is totally a fuck it. Why not? And just do that.
Yeah, fuck it. Just buy it. It's $5. Just buy it.
Just buy it. You probably got some gold coins sitting on your device and just waiting to spend on it. Oh, I got $5 right here.
Use your Nintendo coins.
So, there you go.
There you go.
I like those coins, by the way, but I just wish they accrued faster. Because it's always kind of nice. Like, oh, how many do I have? $5. Wow. Yeah.
The worst part is, like, you buy a game on the console digital and you get a shitload of coins. You use you register a game cartridge and it gives you like 30 and you're like, this is shit. This is like 0.5% of money back.
But sadly, I kind of get why they're doing it. It's just their way of trying to entice you to buy digital, but I would prefer to get full credit for cart too.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
We both know they're just trying to get you to get to that digital boat.
Sons of bitches. All of them.
And how. Dag nabbit.
Pernell, it is always good having you on the show chatting. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Just got to state, just because it came up recently this week even, don't be an internet jerk when it comes to video games, man. Come on. Let people like what they like to like. Play it on the system they like to play it on. Nobody cares if you have superiority, inferiority issues. Just let people like shit. It's not complicated.
All right, next up, we got Jacob Garner joining us. Jacob, how are you feeling?
I feel like crap.
I know you do. Usual. That's why I asked.
Yeah, at this point, I think like we could have a competition between Cole and I as to who's been sicker on the show.
That would be a tough one.
Yeah. I feel like she's got the endurance on me because, like, you know, she's been on the show a lot longer than I have, even though I've been there since almost the beginning. You know, there was that, like, probably a couple hundred episode gap.
You've got the consecutive streak going.
Yeah, it's like since November I've been crappy, so.
Thank wow. God you're coming to visit me this week, huh?
Yeah, I'm just going to cough all over your shit.
You son of a bitch. Anyway, you want to talk about a game?
No.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Velocity G, developed and published by Repixel 8. Released April 12th on Xbox One for $4.79. Velocity G is a futuristic zero-G 360-degree tunnel racing game set in the year 2086. Experience incredible high-speed action as you race your way across exciting tracks, each with their own unique characteristics. Jacob, tell us about it.
You know, it actually would have been funnier if you were just like, okay, and then just, like, stop recording and then just toss that on the podcast.
No, I have shit to do, so I'm making you do it anyway. If you live.
If I live. God. On the plus side, like, listenership to the podcast would probably go up because they'd be like, this is the one that the guy died on.
Yeah, we'll get double-digit views.
Anyway.
Oh, my show sucks. Anyway, Velocity G, tell us about it.
So, the description is right. There is speed and there is racing. I don't know if I'd call it incredible, but you know, it's pretty much, it's this, it's a lot like, F-Zero, and it's, yeah, it's futuristic and you're going around in a track, and the game advertises that it's a 360-degree, tube. However, some of the tracks, that is a lie. That is a bold-faced lie. I was very upset, pretty much on the very first track.
There's only sections that aren't, but for the most part, it is.
Nitpicker. I should have gotten a warning. All right, anyway.
Did you run into the wall?
Yes.
Sweet.
Did I die multiple times? Yeah, of course I did.
Sweet.
So anyway, so it's like F-Zero, you're going around your track and yeah, the speed, you're going at high speeds. There's various weapons you can pick up, like a laser or a shield or a boost, but I'll be honest, like aside from the boost, I never felt like any of the other weapons really helped, like the shield isn't going to help because you're always going to be eating your competitor's dust anyway. And the laser, you pretty much have to be like right next to the opponent because it acts almost like a tractor beam instead. Which, if it was actually that useful, you know, I mean, let me rephrase this. I could see how it could be potentially useful because I could see like somebody, if the controls were better, somebody using it to like draft an opponent and then, you know, like hold on to them and then speed around them. Like I could see that being a pretty nifty way of using it, but it never pans out that way. And it's really just more of like I stopped you a little bit. Ha ha. Like, I don't know.
Because I've blown up a few people with the laser. So I'm not too sure why others have had problems with it. But I know Ian, he played it a bit, and he had some troubles with it. You mentioned the controls. I know he had a lot of issues with the controls as well. I didn't seem to have a problem with them.
I didn't think that they were that bad, but it just never felt that great either. Like, you know, it's either you're going straight in a line or you're all over the damn track. Like, there was just no in-between, and so it's just...
It requires finessing the analog stick, for sure.
Yeah, give me a second. I got to blow my nose.
I'm keeping it in the show.
Uh, See how many other video game podcasts will give you that, you know, phlegm on phlegm action that you just that you so crave. We give our listeners what we want.
Snot man. I don't know what
the L, love.
I don't know what the L could be or snot man something.
Laxatives.
Snot man laxatives. There you go.
I won the contest already for next year.
Sweet.
Or wait, this year.
I haven't had a contest for that in like since episode 200. So I don't know when the hell I'm having another big contest. Anyway, the game. We're getting sidetracked a little bit.
So anyways, the game has a lot of tracks to it, but they don't feel particularly unique after a while. I mean, it's a lot of different races that you could do. Like, there's essentially like a drag race. There's usual like four laps and you're done. And it's just, I don't know, between like the different types of races that you could do in the variety, like, and the different tracks, I just didn't feel like there was a lot of variety. And at the same time, the graphics are very simplistic, which in its own right is like, it's not bad, but there's nothing going on. You know what I mean? Like you look at, what's that hydro, whatever racing game that Vector Unit did?
Hydro Thunder?
No.
Riptide GP?
Yes, thank you. Riptide GP. Like, you look at it and, like, holy crap, there's, like, all these buildings and, like, you're just like, holy crap, how did they fit so much into, like, what is it, like a 50 meg game or whatever?
It's small, it's, I know that.
Yeah, and it's just like this, it's just like the, I just never felt like there was anything to the racetracks. It just felt like, I don't know, like a texture skin got slapped onto, you know, certain areas of the track and that was it. You know, that was like the personality of it. And it's just, I don't know, there's a lot that it left me wanting more. And I feel like this is a title with plenty of potential, but it's just not there yet.
Well, on the bright side, it is only $5.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent, like, try it for, I mean, well, if you're paying $5, I mean, and you've already spent the $5, you're doing a little bit more than just trying it. But, you know, for $5, you know, I think it's worth giving it a shot.
So would you give it a try it or a fuck it, why not?
It's more of a fuck it, why not. I'm hoping that, you know, the people who are involved with the game, I hope that they update it and it becomes a more solid title. But it's just, it didn't wow me in any sense.
Yeah. I didn't come away like super impressed with it, but I did enjoy the time I had with it. I've put a chunk of time into it. I think I'm up to like level 4 or level 5 already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying my time with the game, and for $5, I'm really enjoying it. I'm surprised at how, I don't want to say how great the game is for $5, but for how decently good it is for $5. My biggest gripe with this game is, besides like a lack of flash or, you know, background sparkle, whatever, to dress up the set design, the music. I did not like the music at all. I think the music is incredibly generic. It all sounds the same. I don't know if there's more than one music track in the game. If there are, they all sound as damn near similar. I'm not a fan of the music. I was hoping for something harder and more bass and more oomph. Just, I don't know. I have so many friends who do music that hearing something that sounds like the starting samples of Fruity Loops from 10 years ago, it just doesn't cut it for me.
Yeah, no, I can agree with you on that, because it's just like, I tried, like, once you said that, I tried thinking about the game's music, and I'm like, yeah, I don't remember any of it.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll say this, if they're listening to this review, get in touch with a guy named Blind, Jordan Aguirre, or Aguirre, or however the hell you say his last name. He specializes in electronic music, and I'm sure he would be happy to help get a better soundtrack in your game.
Yeah, so, and honestly, it would fit.
I don't know what his prices are.
To go for.
Yeah, I think his music would be fantastic for the game. Actually, fuck it, I'm going to play some Blind on this episode so they could get a feel for what kind of music he does. But Yeah, that's music was my biggest gripe with the game.
Controls were mine, but
yeah, same with Ian. He had a rough time with the controls. It just comes down to finessing the analog stick. You have to be gentle with it.
I feel like this is potentially a very dirty conversation.
Oh, it very much is.
How much time do you spend finessing your thumbsticks?
I fuck my controller daily.
That's why there's multiples around the house.
Jacob, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
Hopefully this wasn't my final review. You know, it provided, like, you know, I don't die of whatever the sinus thing is. But fingers crossed, the people who put out Mortal Kombat were listening. Because, hell yeah, I want to review that game.
Yeah, good luck on that.
Dang it.
All right, and finally tonight, we've got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing all right. Today, it's a lovely podcast weather.
What kind of weather is it?
I don't know. It's nighttime and I'm inside.
Oh, I thought there was like a bad storm there or something that you're saying it's good podcast weather.
They're saying that there's going to be tomorrow, but today was actually extremely lovely.
It was very cold, nice. Cold, rainy, and shitty up here.
Well, I think that's heading down here, so we're going to get that.
Nice.
So, hooray. Great. We're already talking. We're doing a gaming podcast, and we're already talking about the weather. What has become of us?
It happens all the time with Purnell. So this is nothing out of the ordinary.
Right on.
But do you want to talk about games? Because you got a couple to talk about tonight.
Let's talk about some video games.
All right. First game that you're here to talk about is called Sword and Fairy 6, developed by Softstar Entertainment, published by East Asia Soft, released April 2nd on the PS4 for $26.99. Sword and Fairy 6 is an RPG set in a stunning world of Chinese heroism and fantasy come to life. Embark on a journey to uncover ancient secrets and slumbering beasts in a world torn by warring factions and deception. Freely explore a world of hidden items and abandoned paths while customizing your party and weapons to your heart's desire. Chris, tell us about Sword and Fairy 6.
All right, Sword and Fairy 6. Well, this is, I'm not exactly sure how many of these games have ever come out in the U.S. I mean, this could be one of the only ones as far as I'm seeing. But for those who don't know and haven't looked at Wikipedia yet, Sword and Fairy is actually a huge RPG like thing over in China. I mean, it's like basically their Dragon Quest. I'm looking at the list here, and this is actually like, it's something like the eighth game in the Cardinal series, because they had like Sword and Fairy 5 and then Sword and Fairy 5 prequel, and then they had like Legend of Sword and Fairy 1 and then New Legend of Sword and Fairy 1, which was a remake that they made. And this thing has been going on since the 90s. They actually branched out into like business simulations, and they have a massively multiplayer game in China, several mobile games. Anyway, and there's a VR game that they're going to come out with.
Oh, God.
Oh, and a card game and TV series, a live-action web-based miniseries, and two different stage plays.
Jesus.
So, when I played this game, I was kind of like, oh, it's a nice little RPG, I guess. I mean, it didn't strike me as being overwhelmingly grand, but I'm apparently speaking out of my element here. So, Legend of Sword and Fairy 6, it's a game that is basically, it's an RPG where you, run around with the shoulder, the camera over the shoulder type of thing, much like the modern Dragon Quests. Actually, did kind of remind me of that. You can jump around town, solve little sub-quests for people, and then go on the main quest, and there's a plot involving some crooked monks who are trying to take advantage of people, and apparently it's all tied to one of these ancient gods. Like, they tie in like Chinese mythology into this thing, and so there's like, and the game kind of assumes that you already know a little something about this series, I think, because it really didn't give me much on these characters or their motivation or the MacGuffins that we're surely out in the world to collect. But I'm sure all of that will become apparent through context clues. So yeah, it's basically, you know, all the characters are realistic human models, as opposed to like really stylized. Actually, I say that the art style changed 4 times while I was playing the beginning of this game.
Really?
It started off in this nice, like looking sort of live painting, intro, which I thought was pretty cool. I was like, oh, this is going to be really stylized. And then it goes into a straight up anime, intro sequence, like look like an episode of Avatar or something. It, like, literally was just, yeah, it was just like a fight scene that was literally just a anime fight scene with no, you know, it's all 2D and all that stuff. And then it switches to these live character models walking around in 3D. And, then it starts doing it has optional inter-character conversations that can happen if you push the L button. And those were like straight up Tails style. I don't know if you played one of the modern Tails games, whenever they have characters talking to each other, it's like they're portraits on either side of the screen and they just kind of gab on at each other and it's like cartoony. Mm-hmm. So like it had that too.
Weird.
So yeah, I was like, well, they're kind of pegging down something in something here, but I mean they're going all over the place. So yeah, it's like I said, you know, walking around with the camera over your shoulder. Once you get into like dungeons and stuff, you know, you fight your giant bugs and, you know, basement rats and whatnot. And
giant bugs, that's been a theme this episode.
Oh, has it? Yeah, there's giant bugs all up in this game. So
bug murder has been the running theme this entire episode.
Well, this game is no different. Sweet. So you get into battle and basically it looks like you have like this move set that you can kind of choose from. You choose for one character at a time while the others just kind of either run around or you can set them to auto. But it seems like to have the most control over the battle, you have to basically input the commands on one character, switch to the next character, input the commands for that character, and then go to the next character, etc. Meanwhile, the enemies are just running around, you know, live action style. So it's kind of a hybrid live action and menu based thing. However, and I found this to be the most helpful. I mean, I had to learn how to actually play the game to review it, but what actually ended up happening for the most part is I just switched on full auto mode and just let the battles fight themselves.
Nice.
So you can do that. And actually that has this whole menu, again, like Dragon Quest, cause that's what this is most reminding me of, where you can choose like different, tactics and strategies for your characters. And you know, that was pretty cool, but I actually, you know, I found myself being kind of like, this is too confusing for me, so I'm just going to like let the characters do it themselves. And they're doing a lot better than I was able to do after I learned the controls. So I was like, well, maybe I'll get the hang of this later. And then I got to a boss and he immediately killed me. So I had to fall back and, you know, actually learn the stuff. But all that to say, the actual storyline and plot of the game is really interesting. You know, it's intriguing. You don't know much about the characters at first, but they kind of do the slow reveals of like different aspects of their personalities and stuff. And, you know, the voice acting is entirely in Chinese, with English subtitles. And the issue I had with that one is that, so the subtitles would appear while the character was speaking, but as soon as the character was done speaking, then it would just move on to the next line just immediately. So, you know, all the subtitles were there just like, you know, popping up the full sentence all at once. And while you're sitting there reading it and trying to ignore the voice acting, you know, the problem with this is that so few syllables in Chinese can say so much in English. So sometimes there would be a like one or two sentence word that would end up being two sentences on the screen and you couldn't read it. Like there's no way you couldn't slow it down and you couldn't like catch up to it or pause it. So at some point I was like, man, if I really want to like get this, like the only solution I could think of was to screenshot it. Was just take a screenshot of like certain lines. And it wasn't that troublesome. I mean, you know, I can read pretty fast, so I was able to get it after a while, but considering how like tough it was to read some of the subtitles because they're in white and sometimes against white backgrounds, you know, I found myself challenged to sort of read the game. And of course, you know, I think there's only options to change the subtitles to other non-English languages rather than, you know, there's no English voice acting in this thing. but still, I thought it was pretty cool. And, I mean, the characters emoted pretty well. You could tell that there was good voice acting going on. So, you know, I didn't mind hearing it at all. But actually, speaking of that text, one of my things about this game is that, and this is really most modern games, and I want to tell every developer this, please don't use micro fonts. I don't care how good it looks against your like ultra high definition game. It's like, I can't read the stuff, and I have good vision. I don't wear glasses or anything. But I can't read like most of the stuff that goes on the screen because it's just like tiny, tiny, tiny stuff.
Yeah.
Little micro menus off to the side, and then like something pops up and I'm like, what was that?
And that's why this is kind of off topic, but that's one of the things I liked about the Division 2 was that they had a setting in the options when you first started the game to select like menu and text size.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, this one only gives you the option to change the subtitle size, which I maxed it out and it was still very small.
Oh, boy.
So I'd say like 12-point font or something like that.
Jeez.
But, you know, I was able to hang with it. None of those are really complaints. I actually have one legitimate complaint about this game, and it might be a turnoff for a lot of people. And reading online, I actually noticed this is a thing with this series. It is slow as hell. Like, the frame rate is just sluggish. Like, I know, you know, so things like, you know, when I played Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, there were some issues with it slowing down when there's too much action on the screen. And then sometimes it would, you know, jump back up to the 60 frames per second. Well, like this one struggles to provide like 30 frames a second sometimes.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes you'll get into an intro battle. Sometimes even during like story cutscenes, it will crawl to where you only get like one image, like a second.
Ugh.
It'll just be like, like five pictures in like so much time. So I was flabbergasted. I have no idea. I was just befuddled by this. And I read online that that's like a major ticking point for a lot of reviews of many versions of this game, including the PC version, playing with like an optimal PC setup. People are still not getting their full frames out of this game. So I was like, wow, that's unfortunate, and it really does make the whole thing feel kind of, you know, like trying to, you know, slog through through the mud with steel-toed boots on.
Damn.
But I mean, all this to say that I actually quite enjoyed the ambience of it. I like the look of it. I think it actually, you know, it has a cheapness about it. For instance, when you turn the camera, your character is always faced away from the camera, so they'll just like float in place while you're moving the camera, and you know, the things like little things like that that kind of keep this from looking like a AAA, you know, like a Dragon Quest or a Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
But it's intriguing. I actually quite like the story, and I'm looking forward to playing more of this. But there are some issues that I think might hold this back from general audiences.
Well, overall, $26.99. What do you say?
I'd say it's a hard sell for $26.99. However, I think that if you're into Chinese mythology, if you're looking for something that's different from the usual JRPG, this one definitely has depth. It has a ton of customization options that I didn't even get into because I frankly didn't get far enough into the game to fully explore them because the game kind of spoon feeds you options as you go along, you know?
Yeah.
But just taking a look at the menus and stuff, I'm like, well, there's a lot here. So, and I mean, there's gotta be something that makes this series so staggeringly popular, you know, where it comes from, which by the way, the actual Chinese like name for this game, it's called Chinese Paladin, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Just a little thing there. So $26.99, I'd say, you know, don't go in expecting a usual JRPG, and it does have some, like I said, some lagging issues that don't seem to have any obvious fixes because, I mean, this game's been around for 4 years and getting complaints about the frame rate. but all that aside, if that doesn't bother you, then I think this is worth playing for sure for plot, and it looks like it has some really cool like action ideas too. So I'd say I'm giving it a try.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Silence, developed and published by Daedalic Entertainment, released April 11th on the Switch for $39.99. Can you save Silence, the grim but also serene world between life and death? Can you help Noah find his sister Rennie in this suffering world? Can you bring her home? Explore Silence and join the siblings on their adventurous journey. Chris, tell us about Silence.
Okay, Silence. So, interestingly, so this game opens up with a kid, Noah, who is a teenager, basically running to, you know, it seems like a kind of European town, maybe World War II era or something like that. So, of course, the planes are going over, and this kid spots him and takes his sister to a storm bunker, or, you know, to a shelter, rather. And, you know, the town gets bombed to hell while he's, like, trying to keep her calm. And, you know, it's a very lighthearted intro. And to calm her down, he starts telling this story about a clown and about the world of silence and about this, like, sick king and all this other stuff. Like, basically telling her a story. And I'm like, dang, that actually sounds pretty good. Like, why am I not playing that game instead of... instead of, you know, World War II, the Depression years. And then it turns out this is actually a sequel. This is a sequel to a game that I think only came out on PC. Not entirely sure. I only did a little bit of research on that. But it's called The Whispered World, and it was a point-and-click puzzle game that that came out many years ago, starring a clown and a sick king and, you know, a kingdom called Silentia, I think, or I guess they changed it to Silence at some point. And yeah, so it turns out this is actually a sequel to that, and the character Noah is actually the character from the original game, having gotten into the real world based on stuff that he reveals in the story. He basically spoils the entire plot of the first game to his kid sister as the intro to this game. Hmm. So that's interesting. And you know, the game has you kind of going around this little shelter, learning how to do the point-and-click stuff, which it's basically a point-and-click puzzle game. There's a bit of action, a little bit of timing involved. You do walk your character around in real time, and you interact with stuff by walking into it. Or you can actually do the Bertram Fiddle thing and, like, just push a button to see all the points that you can interact with and just scroll through them, which was very handy for me, because... sometimes walking into the stuff, it would not trigger the correct thing, and I'd end up interacting with the wrong stuff constantly. So after you learn the ropes, the big bombs drop, and then, like, it collapses the shelter, and now Noah can't find his little sister. Rini, by the way, is her name.
My bad.
I almost forgot it. Do what?
My bad.
Oh, did...
I said Rennie. Yeah.
Rennie? Okay. I think it's Rennie. I think that's how he pronounces it. No, I just meant I had not said her name yet. I kept saying sister. I actually didn't realize you'd said it at all.
Thanks for paying attention to me.
Yay! I just wait for my turn to talk. So he loses his little sister. He can't find her, but he hears her voice, so he knows she's there. So this hasn't taken a super dark turn yet. And the collapsed shelter actually opens up into the world of silence, where he, I guess, previously was as a sad clown. And then he's quickly reunited with his caterpillar sidekick from the previous game and from his stories. And you use this little caterpillar guy to help you, like, solve puzzles. Like, he can flatten out, he can inflate. It reminded me very much of, like, a Boy and His Blob type situation. And, yeah, then you start exploring the world, and eventually you get wrapped up in, like, some rebels, and, you know, they're fighting the evil forces that are taking over Silentia. It's very never-ending story-ish. Like, this thing really reminded me of a lot of different things, is what I'm saying here. But, yeah, like, I quite like this one, because it's not very... At least I haven't played far enough into it, but it doesn't seem to be super esoteric like a lot of point and clicks get criticized for. There's no, like, you know, combine the fishing pole with the gum and then place it in the electric socket in order to get, you know, type of thing. Like, it doesn't seem like there's much of that. It's more like, well, we got to roll this boulder. Let's flatten the little caterpillar guy underneath it and then inflate him. And then it rolls into place, and, you know, like, things actually kind of make sense. And plus, you can actually, you know, communicate with people and, like, you know, do other things that don't seem to be much use. Like, you can feed your caterpillar basically anything. Yeah. Or, you know, like, plants and stuff like that, so... That's pretty cool, but yeah, it all ends up being this kind of like chasing after your little sister, trying to save her and supposedly save yourself and get with these rebels. The graphic style is probably my favorite thing about this because it's very, very pretty. This is a very beautiful game, and the characters have that kind of like they're sort of like animated paintings in a sense, you know, like they kind of. They're a little bit paper cutout-y, I guess you could say. Yeah. So it's not like super realistic or anything, but I think that the character models look great. The voice acting's really good. That's still kind of a rarity for video games, especially indie ones. So I really quite like the voice acting, and I like the puzzle so far. I like the dialogue. It's just a really charming and I think well-made point-and-click adventure.
Cool. So $40 on it. What do you say?
Well, $40, I mean, obviously, that to me says that there's probably going to be a physical release down the road. And I would say, yeah, I mean, $40, it does seem worth it. I'm a little, you know, just because I'm kind of a sequence player, that is to say, I always like to play games in sequence. Yeah, it's hard. It's frustrating to me that the prior game is not available, like, seemingly to play. Certainly not on the Switch. So I'm hoping to see that around at some point. But this game stands pretty well on it. I would say it stands, you know, well on its own. And like I said, he does kind of summarize the previous game immediately. And then, you know, there's not much else to know. So, yeah, it's pretty good. But, yeah, $40, I'd say it's a buy it. You know, it's... up to you whether $40 is a digital purchase. Certainly, I personally don't tend to spend that much on digital purchases. But I will say that this is one of the nicer looking and I think better put together point and clicks that I've played. You know, it's not hilarious like Bertram Fiddle or anything like that, but I think that it's really charming and I'm very much looking forward to having my emotions gripped. Because they're talking about that emotional grip in this game, like it's, you know, I'm hoping it doesn't get too dark. I'm hoping that sister ends up okay.
I guess we'll find out.
We will find out, yeah. Looks like it'll be fun getting there.
Awesome. Well, you got one more game to talk about. Final game to talk about this episode is called Out There Omega the Alliance, developed by Miklo Studio, published by Raw Fury, released April 9th on the Switch, April 11th on the Humble Store for $14.99. Space is a hostile place. Dangerous and mysterious adventures will mark each step of your travel. You will not only meet insidious intelligent species, but also deal with an ancient powers linked to your destiny and the fate of mankind itself. Chris, tell us about Out There Omega the Alliance, and I want to give a quick shout out that there's a game with the Omega symbol in its title.
Yeah, that was interesting to me, because it's Out There Omega, but it's not, the Omega is never spelled out, really, I don't think. But yeah, so Out There the Omega is a space exploration and survival. Yeah, you get the intro is that a guy is like, hey, you know, I'm out here in space doing my job, and now I'm going to go into cryo sleep and get flown home. And then he wakes up, and he's like, oh, no, I'm not even in the galaxy. They're like, I'm nowhere near the solar system or anything like that. This is bad. And so, yeah, you end up basically capsized and floating alone in space. And you have to actually repair your ship before you can do anything, and that's kind of where the tutorial comes in, sort of teaches you how to do stuff. The interface of this one is entirely menu-based. There's seemingly no action whatsoever. So basically, either, you know, if you're doing it in touchscreen mode or, you know, playing it on your TV, just basically scroll around menus in order to play this thing. And it's all about basically keeping your resources, you know, up high enough in order to survive jumping to the next star, which will have different planets around it. And, you know, every planet will have a different resource that you can draw from it, but at the cost of the other resources that you have. And so it's all about juggling that. And the main resources, it seems, are going to be oxygen and fuel and iron in order to repair your ship, or, you know, repair structural damage or repair parts, including the parts that you would need to get fuel, which is your drill, for instance. So, yeah, you basically you learn how to fix stuff and how to, you know, basically tell it to fix stuff. And, you know, pretty much everything that you do from moving to entering the orbit of a planet to accessing the resources on the planet, everything has a certain cost of certain other resources, which are, of course, finite. So there's like you really have to like know like what you can get away with, essentially. Like, you know, if I spend too much time gathering fuel on this planet, it's going to affect my oxygen or it's going to cause my ship to take too much damage. And, you know, vice versa, it's going to cost too much fuel to dig for, you know, iron ore on this planet. And then, you know, you go over to like gas giants and stars and things like that. And it just like instantly fries your, you know, your, the actual outside of the ship, but, you know, in exchange for a lot of resources. And once you choose what resource you want, there's a little bar that comes up that will basically, you can choose to, like, go all completely nuts and, you know, throw it in the red and risk actually losing your equipment, but getting a whole lot of, like, resources to sort of tide you over, which I suppose you can do that in an emergency, but a lot of it, a lot of it's kind of, like, just flying around and, like, trying to basically juggle lots of you know, sort of strategy and planning come into play. And of course, as you go through the stars and the planets and, you know, actually try to, you know, do all your stuff, eventually when you gather enough, when you get the know-how, when you learn how to actually build certain parts that will make your ship better, you can then use resources to do that. And, you know, other resources then start to come into play there, like, you know, just all kinds of elements and stuff. And of course, your ship has a this kind of grid-based inventory system where you only can carry so many different types of stuff. So you can't actually like overload yourself on fuel, as if you can actually gather that much fuel. I noticed that that was really hard to do. But you can't overload yourself on one certain item because once it goes over 20, it starts taking up another slot. And you only have so many slots, and I don't know, maybe there's a way you can build up your inventory and stuff, but yeah, I mean, more or less, I mean, this is a kind of, like I said, it's just a resource management puzzle strategy, and it does have a roguelike element to it in that you actually won't know until you start a new game, like the planets that are circling these stars are, you know, going to be seemingly random, but there's not a whole lot of diversity, at least initially, in terms of like what kind of planets there are. So you can kind of at least fumble your way through. But I will say, like most survival games that I've tried to play, this one is really tough. I ended up dying a lot, well, you don't actually die. Well, I guess you can die, but more or less, you just end up getting, you know, stranded out in space forever. Which, you know,
which is good, you know.
Yeah, that's about the same thing. I mean, at least you don't drop dead and like have to eat people like in that other game I played. So yeah, this one, I found it really interesting. It's definitely, it leans real hard on that simulation aspect, but I've actually never seen a roguelike that was only resource management and like, you know, the game literally advertises that there's no action or violence in it. Like, I mean, I don't, the stuff you were reading in the text seems to belie that a little bit. I don't know. I haven't run into any enemies or any sort of like, there are aliens, but, or like alien technology that you can access and stuff like that. But I haven't actually, there's no like pew, pew, pew with your ship or anything like that. It's,
which not know. All games need the pew, pew.
Oh, no. I'm not saying it needs it. I'm just saying it doesn't have it. But it's still really difficult because keeping that ship alive, man, that thing likes to eat up too much fuel for my liking. And then I tried to drill for more fuel and I broke my drill, and then I had to like fix the drill, and then it cost me resources to fly back into the planet, and ah, man, all kinds of stuff goes on in this game.
Damn, sounds crazy.
Yep.
Well,
it was go ahead.
God damn it. No, you go.
I was going to say, it is pretty crazy. Like, it's remarkably intense for a game where nobody's going to shoot you.
Yeah. Well, $15 on it, what do you say?
$15, I think it's good, for sure. I think that's a fair price for it, absolutely. I think this is definitely for fans of, like I said, survival simulations. You know, really, this is a game for accountants. It's all about crunching those numbers, you know, and kind of, you know, weighing the risk rewards of like doing certain activities. But yeah, action fans are not going to find much here. Like I said, it's very hard to keep yourself alive if you're not actively thinking about, like, you know, two moves ahead of where you are now. Because even once you leave a planet after tapping the resources and stuff, you're not out of the woods yet, because you have to travel to the next star. And then, you know, however many things you've got, how many resources you got, will determine where you can even go. And there's a lot of places you have to go before you get to the goal. Like, it gives you a little sweep at the beginning showing you what your destination is, and it's like you got to go through like 50 stars, it looks like.
Damn.
And it has multiple endings and multiple different things that you can unlock once you get to those endings, so there's a lot more to this game than simply taking the basic ship out. But that is how it starts. You only have the one ship available. No. But I think there was like 7 ships total. So you get quite a lot in this game. And like I said, you know, it definitely has that intensity, that sort of lonely feeling. Apart from that, I mean, it's very much a game that leans on its mechanics. And I'd say if that appeals to you, then yeah, $15 is definitely worth it.
Awesome. Sounds good. I guess it's just important to remember that this is a simulation management sim first.
Yeah.
Adventure game second, and then action game not at all.
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, you'd think it would be action because the look of it's very comic booky. But, you know, no pow-pows or pew-pews here.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Still sounds good.
Yeah, I liked it.
Awesome. Well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks as always for coming on and chatting about these games. Thanks again to Purnell and Jacob for doing their part as well. One more thanks to Hadar at Earthborn Interactive for coming on and chatting with Cole and Scott and I. This is a long episode. Holy shit. There was a lot on this show.
Is it 5.5 hours?
No, but probably like 2.25, 2.5. Oh, wow. Something like that.
All right, marathon mode.
Depends on what music I play. I'm going to play some Blind. I mentioned earlier in the show that I was going to play some Blind. So let's get to that now. And Chris, do you have any final words?
Watch out for giant bugs.
about it.